This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to episode 181. What did you watch this week? My name is Mike.
Are we recording?
Yeah, it's recording.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah. So it is Monday night, the 7th of October. And now that my schedule is what it is, going forward, we're going to record on Mondays.
Most likely.
Typically, talking about the week before and then put these out Tuesday night.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's how it's going to go going forward. Today's episode, we are going to talk about the season premiere of the last season of Mr. Robot, last, and, well, that and the Joker movie are going to be at the end, so if you don't want to listen to what
they'll
we have
be,
to say.
They'll be highly spoiled. So.
If you don't want to hear what we have to say, just go ahead and skip it. And, yeah. So let's get going.
Okay.
Now.
Let's get going. Let's go.
Last week, I don't remember if you talked about it. I don't think you did, but I know you mentioned it at some point to me. I really want to hear about Adam Ruins Cops.
No, because last week was Adam Ruins Little Bugs. This week I watched Adam Ruins Cops.
Okay. All right.
And then there's one more episode. Like, I'm backlogged by one. So there's one more episode that's the season finale, which is Adam Ruins Himself. And I'll be watching that.
Okay.
Basically talking about, is it worth doing the show? You know, is this really it seems like it's interesting. Mm. But yes, Adam Ruins Cops, as you can expect, it was kind of a touchy episode.
Now,
not
just
touchy-feely, but...
I'm sorry, real quick, for clarity, is it Cops the TV show or
no,
Police Officers?
Police Officers.
Okay, I was thinking it was Cops the TV show.
Because
I listened to this podcast called Running from Cops, which kind of exposed how that and other reality shows work similar to Cops.
Oh.
So I didn't know if that's what Adam also talked about, but I'd still like to hear what he has to say on this topic.
No, this was about Police Officers.
Alrighty.
And, you know, his show is broken down always into three different, you know. So the first one dealt with SWAT teams, which, being in Maine, we don't really have a SWAT team.
We have the tactical team, the TAC team.
Which is the state police. It's not quite the same.
No.
But he was basically talking about how the SWAT was introduced in the 60s, and it was supposed to be just for hostage situations, prison escapes, you know, major manhunt kind of things, or, you know, the TAC team now here in Maine is for hostage situations, barricaded individuals, stuff like that. Basically, he said that they're usually overkill, far more aggressive than needed. You and I both know from our experience that when the TAC team call goes out, boy, those guys love getting their armor and their high-powered rifles and their tanks. And
Yeah.
Nowadays, most SWAT is used to execute warrants for routine drug searches.
Yep, they are.
Yeah, which is pathetic. Two-thirds of these raids don't even find weapons on the premises, and only six out of every ten have some contraband. So, four-tenths of them.
Well, hey.
Still, that's over half.
That's, yeah.
Now, this is something I'm not sure if you had heard about, but there's a thing called swatting.
I've experienced it firsthand. It sucks.
Okay.
We didn't actually roll the TAC team because I'm not a moron, and I put two and two together at the end. But during the time of the call, I really thought this guy was murdering his family on the phone.
Yep.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Fucking dick.
So this happens 400 times a year at least now. Yeah. A lot of times, which is – this is the part that kills me, is it's based around video games. You know, you get people who are playing an online game and they get really pissed at somebody and they'll actually go through the methods of looking up their home address, their real name, their home address, and then they will get them swatted, which for those who don't know, swatting is where somebody calls up a false report of a murder, a hostage situation, something that is so violently aggressive that it has to roll out a SWAT team or attack team on this other person. You know, they basically say, I know Mike Labby is killing his family right now. Oh, my God. And they've got people screaming in the background to you know, fake it. And they get somebody rolled over there, which, is awful. Basically, I've read stories about people getting killed in these.
Yep.
You know, innocent people getting killed, people getting arrested. And it's a waste of taxpayer money as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically just calling up 911 and sending them over here to do this, mobilizing a whole armored unit. It's
We had 10 guys over there looking for this. I mean, I don't want to get into it.
It was nothing. And they also talked about how when you get into bigger areas, you know, big metropolitan areas, SWAT teams don't always hit the right apartment. You know, they may be going to a call, whether it's a warrant or, you know, a legitimate call in apartment 3C. They kick down the door. They go in there. They, you know, they subdue everybody, make sure that everything's all set. Oh, whoops. We're in the wrong place. It was 3E, not 3C. And then this was interesting. Over the past 30 years, there's been a deliberate effort to militarize our police departments. The U.S. government's been encouraging them. They started just handing out cash for the war on drugs. This was back in the
80s. Right, yeah, that's when it all started.
You and I still saw some of this with the Stone Garden details.
Yep.
You know, where they say, hey, we'll give you extra money if you'll put some people up in these areas. You know, there's going to be this thing. We want extra police up there. And sometimes it's for protection. Sometimes it's literally just to say, hey, we want more people patrolling this area.
It's just Homeland Security money is what it is.
Exactly.
It's Homeland Security details.
Yep.
Yep. They may not even be having anything going on. It's just they have the money. They have to use the money to get more money. So they'll put an extra detail up or maybe not normally have a trooper on a Friday night.
Right.
Like, you know, in a northern part of the Somerset or, you know, Oxford County or whatever.
Well, like I said, it started off with cash for the war on drugs.
Yep.
We'll give your departments more money so that you can hire more cops and get these drugs off our street. That didn't work. In the 90s, they started giving the police used military equipment.
Yep, that's the one I thought he'd go to.
And post 9/11, they were getting grenade launchers, mine resistant tanks.
Yep.
You know, don't know what they need a mine resistant tank for, but they've got them. Today, 90% of American towns with 50,000 or more people have a fully militarized SWAT team. 90% of towns with 50,000 people or more. Which, again, is not a Maine thing so much.
It's probably not even Maine, New Hampshire. It's probably, as maybe Massachusetts might have one, maybe Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
but definitely not New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, Rhode Island.
In the 80s, there were about 3,000 SWAT deployments a year. By 2014, there were around 80,000.
I believe it.
In 2010 to 2016, because of SWAT involvement, there were 81 civilian casualties and 13 officer deaths. That doesn't seem right.
I believe it.
That's only a six-year period. Then he went on to talk about cops in schools, you know, school resource officers. Gotta love that.
Mm-hmm.
That, which, around here, the school resource officer is more like a, well, let's give this guy the school resource officer kind of thing. You know,
it's sort of it's not I'm not going to say it's a punishment, but if no one wants to do it, then it's kind of like it's like putting fire on the radio and off the road.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to look at it. It says that by putting cops in schools, we're starting to treat kids like criminals since everyone's getting tougher on crime when you've got a cop there. The broken window theory, which came about in the 90s, it basically says, you know, a kid's playing baseball and they break a window. Well, that's just a gateway because, you know what, the next step is that they're going to be breaking in there on purpose to steal your money, your drugs, your jewelry. That every act of aggression, every act of vandalism, everything is just leading them down the road to failure. And so they're going to be criminals no matter what. So
I believe it.
We got to stop them now.
I believe it.
You believe that kids are assholes?
Yep.
You have three of them.
I don't believe that.
But that's the attitude, you know. Today it's a broken window. Tomorrow it's a gangbang. It's widely discredited. Yeah, exactly. But this is where it came from.
Let's be reading it.
Yeah. Nice. 40% of schools have a full-time police officer, and they have arrest rates 5 times higher than schools without a full-time cop.
I will say this. In all my years dispatching.
Mm-hmm.
For Augusta and for Gardner. Well, let me put it for Gardner. We have never, the school resource officer has never once issued an arrest.
Well, that was nice.
They've broken up fights. Mm-hmm. What's the word when you take something?
Confiscated.
like, thank you. Like different contraband and contacted parents and made notifications and this and that. But in Gardner, they've never, you know, I think they've done an excellent job.
That's good.
When I was at the city of Augusta, the school wanted every kid charged that was fighting in the school with assault.
Wow.
Yep.
And that's more what this was getting to, I believe.
That was at the city. Any kids that fought, the school wanted them charged with assault.
Wow.
And they were suspended and charged with assault. They had to go to court. I mean, if the DA prosecuted the whole nine. Yeah. And granted, I realized they're juveniles, but that was the message they wanted to say. You're going to fight on school grounds, you're going to be arrested.
Zero tolerance.
Yeah.
Zero tolerance. Yeah.
So I will say, I think Gardner handles it better.
That is. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Most states don't mandate any special training to work in schools, so the police officers just use their basic police training.
Okay, now in Maine, you have to be a DARE officer, so you have to have gone through the DARE program.
The DARE to keep kids off drugs program?
Yes. It's enhanced since then, but there is a required program at the academy to be a school resource officer.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, this is most states. So
right.
That's good. Many schools get outfitted the same way SWAT is. There are five schools out there in the United States right now where their officers have grenade launchers.
Are you fucking serious?
He didn't say which ones.
I'm glad.
There are five schools out there that have grenade launchers. Kids are getting expelled. This I couldn't believe.
Yeah.
Kids are getting expelled as young as preschool.
I believe it, unfortunately.
70% of disciplined students are black or Latino. Imagine that. And black students are suspended at a rate of 3-1 versus white students. And then he kind of wrapped it up. Well, his third one was whether or not police are actually protecting us. And he had to kind of say right there, he's like, look, this is not bashing on individual officers. This is not saying that police aren't putting themselves out there and you know, in the line of duty. He's like, but overall, if you look at it scientifically, police are not protecting us anymore than we think that they are. He basically said that the officers make an average of just one felony arrest a year. Most of the time, they're just giving out tickets for minor infractions. It's true.
Yep.
I saw that. You know, it was this is stuff that you and I knew because we spent time in law enforcement or went to school for it. Police have no legal obligation to stop crimes.
Just because you have an alarm system on your house means the police officers are going to respond.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
If they see somebody mugging somebody else, they are not legally obligated to stop that crime because they could be putting themselves in harm's way. They could be killed themselves. If we said you are legally obligated, then that means that the one officer who's walking down the street and sees 10 guys with AKs opening up on somebody else is legally obligated to throw himself out there and try to stop them. And that's just stupid.
Right.
So there's no legal obligation saying that they have to.
Did you know that the U.S. Postal Service is not required to pick up outgoing mail from your home?
Yes.
It's the same type of scenario. Everyone just assumes, well, I leave it in my mailbox and they take it. They do it as a courtesy.
Right.
They're not required. That's why they have blue mailboxes all over the place.
Yep. Yeah. You're supposed to bring it yourself to one of those receptacles. Yep. And if they lose it by picking it up, they're not responsible because you should have brought it either to the post office or to one of those blue receptacles.
Yeah.
Going to the police have no legal obligation. 1999, a Denver woman called the cops because her estranged, abusive husband kidnapped her kids. The police refused to help. The kids were murdered. Supreme Court said that they weren't at fault, meaning they have no constitutional obligation to help you. Now, they didn't get into the specifics of this. I would have really liked to have known the specifics.
Well, I'm sorry. It's like I heard what you were saying.
Yeah.
But I missed it.
Yeah.
Where was this?
This was Denver, Colorado, 1999. Woman called because her estranged, abusive husband kidnapped her kids. So he probably picked them up from school or picked them up from a park or something like that is my guess. And the police probably said, look, he still has a right to have the kids. And she might have said, well, he's abusive, blah, blah, blah. Well, he's their father. He's allowed to. This is my guess based on what we've seen. Did you find it?
I did.
Okay.
Castle Rock versus Gonzalez, United States Supreme Court case ruled 7-2 that a town and its police department cannot be sued under Title 42 USC, 1983, for failing to enforce a restraining order, which led to the murder of a woman's three children by her estranged husband.
Oh, she actually had a restraining order.
Yeah, that actually, to me, that makes wrong. Castle Rock, Colorado. Jessica Linnea Gonzalez, a resident of Colorado, obtained a permanent restraining order against her husband, Simon, who had been stalking her.
But she had it. Did she name her kids?
I don't know.
Sorry, I'm getting ahead of the game.
To at least 100 yards from her and her four children.
Okay.
Son, Jesse, who was not Simon's biological child, daughter, Rebecca, Catherine, and Leslie, except during specified visitation. On June 22nd, approximately 5:15, Simon took possession of his three daughters in violation of the order. Jessica called the police at 7:30, 8:30, and 10:10. On June 22nd, 12:15 on June 23rd, and visited the police station at 12:40 hours on June 23rd. However, since she was from time to time had allowed Simon to take the children at various hours, so she allowed the order to be violated. Now she wants to be enforced, and at her convenience, the police took no action, despite Simon having called Jessica prior to her second police call, informing her that he had his daughters with him at an amusement park in Denver. At approximately 3:20 a.m. on July 23rd, Simon appeared at the Castle Rock police station and was killed in a shootout with officers.
Wow.
So he rolled up and opened fire on the officers, went in and opened fire, is what that has to be. And a search of his vehicle revealed the corpses of his three daughters who had been assumed killed prior to his arrival.
Wow.
Wow is right.
So I can understand the outrage. Absolutely.
That's, I mean, like... Wow.
Because it is a restraining order. At the end of the day, whether she allowed it to be violated or not, it's still legally binding. So for them not to enforce it and say, well, you've let him get away with it sometimes, we're not going to do anything, I can't agree with that. I can't say that they were in the right there. I understand the logic behind it. You know, it was like when we get those calls from I shall not use names here, but we would get calls from people who would say, oh, my boyfriend's over here and he's harassing me. You keep inviting him over. Yeah, but I got a restraining order. We'll stop inviting him over.
Yeah.
But the police would always have to go and remove him.
Yes.
Because it's still his fault for violating. So, yeah, I can't say that the cops did the right thing there.
The court's majority opinion by Justice Antonin Scalia. Thank you, Scalia. Yeah. Well, I went to a girl named Jessica Scalia at school, and that's how she spelt it. So that's why.
Okay.
I'm like, this doesn't sound right. Excuse me. Held that enforcement of a restraining order was not mandatory under Colorado law. Where a mandate for enforcement to exist, it would not create an individual right to enforcement that could be considered protective entitlement. Oh, it's like if you're a police officer, you know, oh, police have a quota. They have a quota.
Yep.
Oh, they have to write so many tickets a day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or if a police chief mandates that if anyone's driving 15 miles an hour or higher above the speed limit, you will write them a ticket.
Right.
You can't do that.
Right.
Cops don't have a quota. They can't be mandated to write a ticket for violation because it takes away officer discretion.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what they're saying here.
I don't know. I still don't agree with it. Back to my original point, there is logic in the idea that they're not mandated to enforce the law. They're not mandated to stop crime. That's what it is. Because they could be putting themselves in harm's way. They're expected to, but they're not legally bound to. In this case, though, where she called the police station three times, showed up there once herself.
Yeah. You know,
something should have been done. That's unacceptable.
And he showed up 3 hours, like two and a half hours after she left. He showed up and got into a shootout with officers, was killed, and they found his dead children in the car.
Wow.
That's okay. See, part of me, and I've said this before, wants to watch Adam Ruins Everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy it more you explaining it to me, and then we really kind of deep dive discuss it.
It's funny. I just had dinner with the Petries the other night,
yeah.
And Jason was telling me that him and his 10-year-old are loving it. He's like, we discovered this. Adam Ruins Everything. He goes, and Ethan just loves it, and I love it. And I was like, I love that show, too.
Yeah.
So we talked about it a little bit. It's a really good show, but I get what you're saying. You know,
yeah, like, I kind of want to watch it, but I really enjoy you telling me about it. It's...
Well, I think you'll also – we're almost done with the cop part, but I think you'll agree with this part. Overwhelmingly, policing, you know, policing the streets, et cetera – is used to control the people that society doesn't want to deal with, like the mentally unstable.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
20% of all arrests are somebody with mental issues.
I believe it.
The three largest psychiatric facilities in the U.S. are inside of prisons.
I believe that too.
Three largest psychiatric
prisons. That does not surprise me.
So basically mental illness is now a crime. As is homelessness. There are places where you can be arrested for being homeless.
Yep.
For
being a vagrant.
Yep. Or for having a mental illness and running around screaming at the top of your lungs. You're arrested for it. It's against the law.
Yeah.
Half of all New York City repeat arrests are homeless people. Basically, we've criminalized addiction. You know, so somebody is a heroin user, they're a criminal.
Well, yeah, of course it is. Buying the drugs is illegal.
Owning the drugs, having them in your system isn't illegal. So... that's where it's kind of interesting. So it was an interesting episode. It was, like I said, it was touchy because there are going to be people who are like, yeah, screw the cops. I hate the cops. They're useless. And then there are going to be the people who say, we need the police. And it's a very polarizing issue. It's like when he did the Adam Ruins Guns.
Yeah.
You know? And he basically said right from the video that both sides have it right, both sides have it wrong.
Excuse me very much.
So that was Adam Ruins Cops.
Well, that was very interesting.
What else you got?
Oh, what do I got?
Yeah, what do we got for shows?
Well,
that was a very car salesman-y way to say that.
Thanks. I watched the second episode of American Horror Story. I watched Mr. Jingles.
Okay.
I'm still digging it, but I don't really get what you're saying, because I haven't watched episode 3 yet. Did you?
Yes.
Okay. When you said, do you think this is going to take a different turn and be filmed in a different way?
Mm.
I didn't see it in this episode, I guess, what you're talking about. But I did like the one guy that was kind of stuck in his own like Groundhog Day loop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the Night Stalker kept killing the same...
And that's what it was. You know, this guy is from the 70s when this happened. And this is the guy that they hit with the van.
Yeah, this is the guy that hit... But evidently, maybe he's a ghost, but he doesn't know he's a ghost.
They all grabbed him. They picked him up. They carried him.
I know. And the Night Stalker killed him like 9 times or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was mostly that. I was wondering if we were going to find out that this whole thing was and then the counselor lady, I'm trying to remember because I just watched the third episode and I don't want to get them crossed over.
Yeah.
But towards the end, the counselor lady was like talking to somebody like she knew what was going on.
Yeah, okay. So that was at the end of the second episode. Leslie Grossman
who
plays Margaret Booth. Yeah, she seemed to – she was talking – she recognized the hiker.
Yeah.
Oh, she was talking to the Night Stalker like they knew each other.
Yeah.
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 And she was talking to the hiker and she's like, you know, hey, you were dead, you know, 20, 30 years ago, whatever it was.
And she ends up hiring the Night Stalker to protect her and the other kids there, if you will, from Mr. Jingles.
Yes.
Yep. And more of the counselors get killed. They killed a lot of people in this episode.
Well, they didn't kill any of our main characters.
No, they killed secondary characters. The nurse we met in the first episode where Mr. Jingles escaped, she goes to the camp to warn them, and the woman's like, and basically the head counselor, the victim who got her ear, you know, she's like, yeah, I know he's coming here. I assumed he was. Why do you think I reopened the camp to lure him here? She wants him dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she ends up breaking down.
Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. And then Mr. Jingles very violently kills her.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm just going to say this. The third episode, it became very American Horror Story.
Okay, well, I really enjoyed the first two so far. And yes, there's a lot of homages and shot-for-shot type things almost of different horror movies. But I really dug the first two episodes so far.
After the third episode, I don't know if I'm going to keep watching
it. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they did a couple of things in there that just... They really, and I'm looking forward to talking about it next week, but, you know, there were at least three things that I was like, oh, come on, are you serious?
Well, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, well, I hope so. That way we can talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I'll definitely watch the third episode. I'll probably try to watch the fourth episode this week as well.
Yeah, I will at least watch the fourth episode. So,
Kate is going away this weekend.
She's finally leaving. Pulling the trigger, huh?
Well, she's just going to go visit her sister at home, okay. But she's taking Wesley with her. So it's just going to be Kane and Addison and I Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Monday is the holiday. I believe they're going to the mother's at some point, so I'm probably going to go watch Rambo in the afternoon if you want to go.
Okay.
I mean, you have that pass thing.
Right. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
That made the... Anyway, we'll get to that.
Yeah. It's not free, though. You still have to pay $21 a month.
Yeah. And if I buy the tickets online, I pay a 50-cent surcharge.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anywho, was it The Good Doctor? Are you up to date on this?
Yeah. I still like this show. I liked this episode. You don't sound like you like this episode.
I don't like watching the Park and Morgan, I guess, compete all episode long, these first two episodes, who's going to do the first surgery.
Yeah, I'm glad that they finally settled it by the end of this episode.
Yeah, me too. That was very, very annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, where she's like, oh, I guess he had something with his kid. I don't have kids, so I can stay all night. And then the guy's like, he shows back up and he's like, hey, I brought coffee because, you know, we're going to be pulling an all-nighter.
Yeah. I liked how... and I don't care about Lim and Melendez and their relationship.
Nope.
And she makes, he erred and erred on the side of caution. Well, and which doesn't sound bad, but then Melinda goes, no, you still told him I erred when I didn't. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I made a mistake. I did not make a mistake.
Right.
It's one of those sayings like, I could care less, which means you do care.
Yeah.
At least a little.
Yep.
You know?
Exactly. And if you don't know that, listen to Word Crime. Weird Al explains it.
So it's kind of the same thing. So Andrews is back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an attending now, or a resident, or whatever he is. I don't know the levels. I don't know how the chain of command works.
Right.
But anyways, there's this kid who saves this girl on the train or whatever it was, the bus.
Cool story.
And he got his face just... I mean, that was really graphic.
Yeah.
The way they showed how his face was missing.
Yeah. They curb stomped the fuck out of this kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And his face was bad. And they couldn't... It was basically like, yeah, there's not enough left here for us to fix it and save it. We're going to have to wire his jaw shut. And so wake him up and let him know, because forever he's not going to be able to eat again or talk or anything.
Right. No solid foods, no talking. His jaw's going to be wired shut forever.
And then... They tell him, and he's like, fine.
He's like, I had to lose some weight anyway.
Yeah, and so then they do the surgery, and Sean said something, and it made Andrew stop. And I liked, because at first they're trying to be like, basically, you know, Andrews was a hero because he gave up his job for Sean, and he fired that guy, and he basically got fired himself. But then, you know, and that was the synopsis of this, is like, he sees this other guy trying to be a hero, and why can't, what's wrong with just doing something, selfishly and everything. And then so Andrew's like, we're going to figure out a way to save this guy's face. And so they eventually do.
Right.
And what Andrew says at the end when he talks to Sean in the locker room, when he says, like, I was angry. Mm-hmm. I lost my job because I stuck up for you. And,
I took a huge pay cut.
Yeah, yeah. And I resented you for it, and I was holding it against you, da da da. But today, you know, basically he learned a valuable lesson somehow from this. And he was like, and you made me proud. You made me proud of my decision today.
Yeah. Which is kind of a patting himself on the back.
It is.
You know, he's like, I was so proud of myself.
I made the right choice. Yes.
It's like, It's a little backhanded.
But at the same time, he was probably doubting himself the whole time, too. Like, I threw my career away for this guy.
Right.
Was it worth it?
Right.
And he's like, okay, yeah, it was.
Yep.
And then, of course, Sean learns a valuable lesson about dating and how you don't have to go out in public and eat at restaurants. You can just hang out, eat a bag of chips together.
Right, yeah. Right. And,
you know, and so him and Astrid in the episode having some chips.
Yep. Yeah, because basically they I can't remember which one it was, but they go on this big soliloquy about, you know, how love is the greatest thing. And,
yeah.
You know, you search for it, and if you could find it and blah, 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 it makes everything worthwhile. And then, you know, the blonde doctor there, she's like, yeah, and if Sean doesn't have to mess with the game, then kudos
good for him.
Him.
Yeah. You
know? He doesn't have to get screwed over like the rest of us who are trying to find it and failing and missing out, thinking we have it and then getting our hearts broken. You know, if he's decided that he doesn't want it. Yeah, she was saying that it was like a biological imperative. And we were, you know, evolution has programmed us to, you know, seek out other people so
right.
that we can pass our genes on. Kind of drops love down a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I get it.
You're down with it?
I feel it sometimes, I gotta tell you. But yeah, it was a good episode. Like you said, I can do without some of those stories. I'm glad that at least one of them is cleared up. Cause,
yeah.
But their whole relationship, him and Lynn, who cares?
Just I certainly do not.
No, I don't care about any of that crap. So New Amsterdam?
I didn't watch it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the one show I didn't get around to watching.
Okay. You say that now, but I'll bet you there are more.
It's one of the shows I didn't get around to watching. I'll just say it like that.
Because I was going to say, did you know The Blacklist came back this week?
Shit, it did?
It did.
Oh.
So that's another.
That's the one. Another show I didn't get around.
That is the two shows that
I didn't even know it was back, yeah.
Yep. I was surprised, too, and I went, ooh. And I watched it, and it was okay.
Oh, well, that's.
For a season premiere, it was a little weak sauce.
Oh, really?
A little bit.
Usually their season premieres are pretty explosive.
Yeah, they're pretty strong. This one was a little weak. I'm not going to go into detail, but yeah, I really want to talk about it with you.
Did I talk about In the Shadow of the Moon last week?
I don't think so.
Okay. I think I watched it after you left, after we recorded, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's just, I'm like, I know I watched
movie
that
or a while. TV show?
Movie.
Okay.
Talk about it later, then.
Okay.
Just thought of it.
Real quick, I will say that I watched several shows that we don't talk in detail about. You know, I watched The Righteous Gemstones, On Becoming a God in Central Florida, still good shows. God Friended Me is back.
Yep.
That was my favorite show of last season.
Yeah.
Surprise hit. And season two, just as powerful. Like, the first episode aired, I watched it, and I was like, yeah! I still love this show. It's great. Strongly recommend anybody who likes these shows. Remember Touch that came on with Kiefer Sutherland and that kid? And, like, you know, every episode you'd meet, like, six different people, and they were all connected somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to that kind of thing, but I really like it. It's inspiring. It's uplifting. The people have good stories to tell. Definitely. Still giving it a hard sell.
Okay.
And the first two episodes of A Million Little Things, because that came back, it's actually better the second season than it was the first season. I mean, it kind of grew on me in the first season, but it was very drama-filled. The second season does have drama, but I'm enjoying it. It's like the off-brand version of This Is Us, basically.
You know? Okay.
Like, yep. If This Is Us is the Land O'Lakes butter, then A Million Little Things is like the Hannaford butter.
It's the Hannaford brand.
Mm-hmm. But I like it. So, yeah. And, Evil, two episodes in now. Still not sold.
Yeah, from what I've heard, I'm kind of glad I'm not watching that.
Yeah, I'm going to give it another episode or two, but honestly, eh. And The Unicorn was really good this week.
Yep.
He basically went out on a date with a girl. And he hasn't been dating in forever, as we know. So he went on a date with a girl, and it wasn't that good, but she asked for another date. So he's like, okay, well, you know, I'll go on another date. And they're like, why are you going on another date? And he's like, well, it's the polite thing to do. And then she started, like, she sent him a Facebook friend request, and he accepted it. And they're like, why are you accepting it? And he's like, well, because it's the nice thing to do. Like, she sent a friend request. Why wouldn't I be her friend? We can be friends. And they're like, no, you've been on two dates with this woman. and, you know, basically teaching him that he, it's not that he was leading her on, but he didn't realize that he essentially entered into a relationship with her because of things like, you know, liking her posts. And, you know, she'd send him a funny picture of her with a Snapchat filter, and he'd be like, oh, that's great, I like it. And she'd be like, no, it's your turn. So he'd respond. Like, we're seeing his response, and he's like, oh, my God, I'm so busy. And he's like, okay, eh. And he'd take the picture, and she's like, oh, my God, you're so cute. And he's like, thanks. Not realizing that he was just feeding into the relationship. But then by the end, you know, he broke it off with her. He was like, you know, hey, I think we should just be friends. And she's like, broken heart, broken heart, broken heart, you know, sending these broken heart emojis. And then she's like, LOL, just kidding, I'm on a date right now. Let me know if you ever want a bone. And he's like, oh, okay. So it's fun. I like the show. I think that catches me up on shows that you don't watch that I do.
Watch The Good Place, The Girl from Arizona Part 2.
Yes.
Which part are you laughing about?
Jason, I put a little cheat code in the neighborhood so that if I say your name 5 times, my headache goes away.
Yeah, Jason, do you know why I made you a monk in the first episode? Why? Well, because then you couldn't talk, and it drove you crazy, so that was your own little personal hell, but it was great for us. I don't know. I didn't really – there was a couple things I enjoyed about this episode, but
– No. They're trying to teach Brent Norwalk humility by showing him how good other people are.
Yeah.
And all he got out of it was, I don't belong here. This is the good place.
Yeah. I need to be in the best place.
Yeah, because I was the best person.
Yeah.
Like, this guy just oozes Trump. Like, he's sitting there and he's just like, really, you know, all these things that I do, I'm the best, I'm the greatest. There was another line by Jason in there. He's like, they're talking about you shouldn't do bad things because, you know, it hurts people and you're not going to get anything out of it. And he goes, boy, I wish somebody had taught me this on Earth. Michael's like, people did, mostly judges. Oh, no, maybe that was Janet that said that
to me. No, Michael did. People did, many times, mostly judges. Yeah. Janet and Jason broke up because Janet's got so much to go on going on. She just needs to focus on that, which is fine. But
otherwise, the place is going to fall apart.
Makes him a little sadly depressed.
Yeah.
But that, and then that's when Michael has to talk with him.
And then she brings it to, like, first she's like, you know, we're breaking up. And then she's like, oh, and the Jaguars cut so-and-so.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I thought you had to know.
And he's like, no.
Eleanor leads Chidi. Ushers Chidi towards Simone to help her believe and accept her afterlife, which he successfully does, essentially.
Which he did a really good job with that. He did. You know, he's like, he sticks his finger in her drink, and she's like, hey, and he goes, well, if none of this is real, what should it matter?
Yeah.
And then he puts a little whipped cream on her face, and he's like, just leave it there for all of eternity since it's not real.
And I wish I could quote the philosopher that he quoted, but basically it's like the little kid philosophy of like, well, if I believe it, that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what you say, well, I don't believe you, and that's all that matters. So what I believe is correct.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But otherwise, I wasn't overly thrilled.
No. No, they're building to something, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it definitely felt like a filler episode.
Mm-hmm. Superstore episode.
Sorry.
Mateo's lawyer shows up to get testimony from Cloud9.
Cold open on this episode. They're having their employee meeting in the break room. And the first line is Amy going, okay, so we still don't know if the raccoons have keys or if someone is letting them into the safe.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They're having the meeting, talking about Mateo's lawyer coming. They need testimonials. We got to, you know, make Mateo sound good. And then, like.
And that's just for bail.
That's just to get him out on bail. Yeah. So Sandra shows up and.
Oh my God! This is painful.
Is this for me? Oh, is this like my surprise engagement cake? No, those are donuts from leftover from yesterday. Oh, okay. And then Dean is just like, Sandra, it's not on the list. As your maid of honor, I'm not throwing you a surprise engagement party. It's not on the list. And then she refuses to believe and accept it, and that just goes on and on.
It was painful. Like it was uncomfortable for most of the episode because then Jonah doesn't want to see her upset because she's so sad.
Yeah.
You know, she's expecting this, so he decides to throw her a party. And Dean is like, so you're going to make me look like an a-hole? Is that what this is? Yeah. It's on the internet, Jonah. We can't argue with the internet. The internet says it's not one of the duties.
Oh, what does she call the internet? It's like the
oh,
it's hilarious. And Jonah's just like, that's not what it is.
It was great. But the engagement party, it just keeps getting more awkward. It was like one of those episodes of The Office where you just don't want to watch anymore because it's just so painful. You know, every scene that she came in, she'd be like, is this it? Is this my party? And then when, what's his name? I can't even think of his name. Who's she getting married to?
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
All I can think of is Randy, but that's not it. But basically, when he shows up, like, he's doing the same thing, and he's like, you know, this is going to be great. He's actually over talking to Garrett at one point, and Garrett's like, yeah, I'm busy. I'll have to talk to you later. He goes, when?
Yeah.
What do you mean, when? Yeah. When will you talk to me? You said later. When's later? He's
like, yeah, it's bad. Yeah. It's bad. But Mateo eventually does eventually get out, Jerry, because... Oh, what's his face? The old store manager?
Oh, yeah.
Glenn, not Glenn, jeez him.
No, what's his name there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff,
yes.
He,
Who's now for corporate.
Yeah, who's now a corporate guy or whatever. His lawyer's basically like, look, I got like a Nobel Prize winner and an Olympic athlete. I don't even know if they're going to get bailed out. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get anything done for Mateo. And then Jeff's like, well, you know. We had ordered that raid on ICE and, you know, that ordered, you know, ICE to do the raid and this and that. And there's some, like, catch where ICE is not allowed to raid businesses when they're told to by the corporate or something like that.
They can't corporate organized ICE while the store was looking to unionize. While they
that's what it was. Yes, that's
and
what
that's a direct violation of civil rights. And yes. So he was like, well, we can do that. So they were looking for recording.
They're looking for proof and they couldn't get it. And then finally Jeff went on the record and testified. And I love the way they did it, which is Cheyenne's like, well, I got the stuff out of Mateo's locker. What do you want me to do with it? And Jeff's like, what's that? It's a picture of them together. Yeah, he was hanging in his locker. So Jeff feels guilty because he still kind of apparently has feelings for Mateo and heads off to tell it. And Cheyenne's like, so what do you want me to do with this stuff? I don't know. Just throw it away. Yeah, this is just profile picture. So that's how I got it. You know, that was some good stuff. So Mateo gets bailed out at the end.
And he
when Sandra shows up for her surprise engagement party, the real one that, yeah, they've already, oh, you guys start, because, oh, that's right, Dina makes Sandra bring everything.
Yeah.
Glass is not plastic. No one wants to bring that. And so she drops the box and they all break and she's got to bring chips and all this other stuff. And she has this nice dress on, actually. Mm-hmm. And then she gets in there and everyone's already standing around eating cake. Oh, you started without me? So I thought that was great.
And they're like, nope, this is for Mateo.
Yeah. You're just, yeah. So I'm still not watching The Goldbergs, but I do love Schooled.
Oh, isn't it great?
I do. Dude, do really enjoy it.
This episode where they were trying to get, because basically they had the Dr. Nass, who was the librarian, who has a doctorate in library studies.
Yeah.
So he's a doctor.
Doctorate of library sciences or something like that.
And he is an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, throws books at kids and screams at them and... Yeah, he's just a complete asshole.
This is a Friends-centric episode.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the new science teacher's like, why have we fired him yet? I like her.
I do, too.
I like that character.
Yeah.
I like that character.
She's not a mean person, but at the same time, she's coxian.
Yeah.
You know?
So Coach Meller hurts his back, and his emergency contact is Ms. Cinnamon.
He hurts his back because he's going to lift up the refrigerator so that they can get almost
a grape that rolled underneath it so it doesn't rot and dry and like...
And attract ants and mice.
Yeah.
So he's just like, I'm going to lift it. You grab it.
Yeah. And he thinks that he says that him and Ms. Cinnamon are in a Ross and Rachel type relationship. They've just been on a break, you know, for 7 years. And so when Lainey goes to talk to her about it, she's like, yeah, no, we're not dating. No, not even in the little bit.
But at least Lainey actually tells him that. Like, she doesn't spend the episode, oh, I'll try to protect his family. No, she goes straight up. She's like, no, you're not dating her.
Yeah, he goes to tell her. She goes and tells him, and she's going to give him a ride. But she's like, I'm going to help you find someone. I'm going to help you find a girl. Like, and I love the chart of, like, where you can meet women and where you spend your time. It's school and gym. He's like, well, you can find someone at the gym. No, I can't. That's why I'm there to work out.
Yeah.
I can't, if I'm sitting there flirting, then I'm not working out with people, you know, I'm not working out, and I can't do that. I could jump on this desk right now from a standing jump, you know, You want to see it? No, I really don't. And so she takes him to speed dating. That was the best. Did you see the outtakes at the end of the episode?
Yes.
Oh,
those were awesome.
It literally, like, he's trying to treat speed dating not like you have 5 minutes, but you have one line to say to someone.
Mm-hmm.
So he just opens with these absurd lines.
And they're all things that for him are like,
yes,
non-starters. So yeah. It'll be like, you know, they're how many beets they eat a day or something like that.
Yeah, like how many beets do you eat in a day?
Yeah.
Hi? So he doesn't meet anyone there. And, well, he meets this one girl. He thinks that he kind of has a connection with her. Because
Lainey basically tells him, she's like, try this, you know, just talk. And
so he did, and he seemed, and then she didn't put him down. So he had no one on the list, and he handled it well. He's like, well, we tried, Lainey. All right. Well, he doesn't call her just Lainey. He calls her full name. Lainey Lewis. There it is. Yeah. Well, we tried Lainey Lewis, and it just didn't work out, and this and that and everything. And I thought it was good.
Which, by the way, she got 10 numbers.
She's like, I wasn't even in. Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's like, no, I did. All right.
And then at the end of the episode, he shows her his, I got to drop off my new emergency contact form. And he shows it to her, and it's her as his emergency contact.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, because she's moved in touch, but at the same time, that's a burden sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. And the whole thing had started because her and Barry are doing so well.
In their long-distance relationship.
That's right. They watched Friends last night, long distance over the phone.
Yeah.
But then at the end, you know, she kind of tells him, she's like, look, it's hard, and I don't know if it's going to work out because, you know, we watched it, but he fell asleep.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't see each other, and it's hard. It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
And then one of the kids gets dropped off there. And his mom is there, and
oh no, his aunt.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yes. she meets this girl, and it's one of the students. They're at some science fair thing or whatever.
Yeah,
and so he's of course chaperoning because he lives at the school or at the gym. And she's like, "Oh, don't I know you?" And he's like, "I don't know. Oh, my nephew, whatever, goes here. Okay. And you and I go to the same gym. Oh, yeah." And they're chatting, and then you see him jump up on the desk and everything.
Yeah. So that may be his new girlfriend.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Jay Chandradreskar or whatever.
Yeah.
Directs the next episode.
Ramathorn.
Yep. Excuse me, I had a hiccup there. Oh, to continue this jumping around, this is us.
The pool, part two.
Part dos. Jack and Rebecca are together. It's the last day of summer. They want to take the big three to the pool. No one wants to go.
Because they're all going into seventh grade. So it's not like the first time we saw the pool where they.
Right.
This is, Kate doesn't want to because she just wants to hang out the house.
Yeah.
Kevin is really into his hip hop.
Yep.
And Randall wants to finish two more books so that he can really crush the summer reading challenge and beat everybody else.
Yeah. But they end up going to the pool,
mm-hmm.
And then Jack's all excited. He managed to get 5 chairs.
It's unheard of.
And he says it so many times. It's awesome. and then, like, Randall goes off to hang out to do something. And
2 black friends show up.
Yeah. And
they're like, hey, come hang out with us.
And then Kevin goes off to do his thing, but he ends up hanging out with Randall. And
because he knows hip-hop.
Yes. So. And he's got Busta Rhymes on his Walkman.
And they're like, hey, want to put it on our boombox? Because, you know, it's the 80s.
And then Kate goes and hangs out with the cool girls. And, of course, Rebecca's all suspicious that they're hanging out with her for alternative reasons.
Yeah, they asked her. They said, Kate, come hang out with us. She's like, they've never asked her to hang out.
Yep.
And her suspicions are confirmed. You know, they basically tell her, they're like, oh, that cute boy over there really wants to kiss you. So you should go hang out behind the snack shack. And
so she does.
And then some dorky boy comes behind there. Yep. And she's like, oh. And he goes, who did you think it was? She goes, oh, I thought it was so-and-so.
Harvey, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. She goes, who did you think I was going to be? And he's like, you. So he had a crush on her.
But then he says, just wait here for a couple minutes, then we can leave.
Yeah, they'll go away.
Yeah. And she's like, nope. And so she kisses him, and she walks out, and she actually takes control of herself for the first time. And then Kevin and Randall get into a fight because Randall's friends think that Kevin's blacker than he is.
They call Randall an Oreo.
Yeah. And then they make up.
Well, Jack comes over and breaks it up, and they actually, like, stop.
And they
cover for each other.
Yeah. And then when Dad leaves, then they kind of make up.
Which, again, shows growth because They're not kids anymore.
But then we get this cool montage at the end of the episode where you see, like, the other times they've gone to the pool, and then, like, the episode where it ends with all the kids laying on Jack, and now they're all just in their own chairs hanging out. Mm-hmm. So that's that segment. That was kind of neat.
They used the five chairs, so that's good.
Kevin, we find out a
this
lot
is in
about
the future his, or the
yeah, the current. Current. We find a lot about his sobriety in this episode, what he's done to stay sober. And it's basically he's put himself in almost a robot-like trance when he goes to work, and he doesn't try to add anything or change anything or make things grand or whatever. He literally does exactly what he's told, how they want him to do it, how you know basically, he lets them control his life, and he's taking care of plants this whole time.
Ficus,
yes.
The one thing that he has control over.
Yeah, it's the best relationship he's ever had or something. And at the same time, he's trying to have a good relationship with nephew Jack, who's blind, and everything else.
He's trying to throw himself into that and say, you know, I can't do anything else because I got to be here to help Kate.
Yep. So he's kind of blindly, but he doesn't know how to help Kate. And then he gets offered this really – oh, M. Night Shyamalan was in this episode as the director.
Yeah.
And then Kevin also gets this opportunity to go interview for a job in Chicago for a movie role. And he's not going to take it because, well, he doesn't really want to be away from anyone.
Right.
But Kate eventually talks him into doing it because this is probably the best thing for you. You know, keep on the pattern that's kept you sober, which is keeping working. Because in this AA meeting, he talks about how, like, everything that I just described, he goes, so when he gets on the set until the director says cut at the end of the day, now he has to be himself again, and he doesn't like being himself.
Right.
But he goes, well, we assume he's going to Chicago, but at the end he shows up at Nikki's place and gives him the ficus.
Because we find out through his talking and his text that Nikki needed the bail and Kevin wired him the money. So he never actually went out there.
Right.
So he wired him the money. And as he said, that was a lot of money. He won't check in with me. He won't return my texts. He won't return my calls. And they're like, dude, it's Nikki. You know, just let him go. And he's like, no, I want to know that he's okay. I want to know this. Yeah. I sent him a lot of money. He's feeling invested and feeling like, you know, addiction is a thing. So, yeah. So he shows up at his place with the ficus.
Yep. The other story in this is Kate's story with her and Jack. And basically they have someone that comes over to help them to set the apartment or the house. It's not an apartment anymore. But it's the house the way they want it to be because really they can't move anything. You know, the house Jack is starting to already, which I'm surprised at this, but he's already starting to get a grip on where things are, even though he's a non-moving baby.
I don't think that's...
Neither do I. And, oh, Kate's skinny friend who thought she was fat's there.
Yeah.
Which I think is funny that they're friends based on past episodes. But, and this is kind of... I actually found this interesting because... And Rebecca's there with Miguel. Is it Miguel? Yeah, it doesn't matter. But, and Toby's there. And they're all basically going around the apartment to see what might be dangerous for the baby as the baby becomes mobile.
Corners,
cords, corners, things that the baby might run into or grab and pull down or knock over or whatever. That's actually quite interesting.
Yes.
It's like it's baby-proofing to a super degree.
Right.
There's another cool scene where Kate is with Kevin, and this is when she convinces Kevin to go to Chicago, and Kevin's trying to pick up the baby, and the baby cries every time.
Yeah.
And I never thought of this, so it's kind of interesting where Kate's like, well, it's because you scare him. He doesn't know who it is, so you got to talk to him. You got to say, hey, this is your mom. Oh, and then you touch his leg because what you use your face to show expressions and what you feel, the baby can't read that.
Right.
Has to go with the tone of your voice and touch, which makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
And you say, I'm going to pick you up now. And then you pick the – it actually makes a lot of sense.
When she walked into the room, it was great because Kevin had been pouring his heart out to the baby.
I love this, yes.
He's like, you know, oh, I don't feel like a good enough person. You know, basically having a Pearson meltdown, but, you know, not screaming or crying, just like pity me type of thing. And he turns around and sees Kate and he goes, how long have you been there? And she's like, only a couple of seconds. He goes, oh. She goes, but I heard everything else on the baby monitor. He's like, oh.
Hey, that's so fair. Toby's concerned about Kate because everyone keeps telling Toby how great he looks, how much weight he's lost, and he's playing it off that, yeah, well, I'm not eating, and I'm stressed out all the time, and I'm not handling this well, and Kate seems to be handling this well, and this and that, but then secretly tells Rebecca that Kate's overeating, which she did look very large in this episode.
And we saw at the end of the episode that she was mindlessly snacking on things again.
Yes. And Toby's going to the gym secretly and getting some rugged workouts in. We saw from the collage of this season on This Is Us that he takes his shirt off at one point. He's got a little bit of abs going on even.
Well, don't forget the actor in real life wears a fat suit for the show.
Yes, and they're also showing his arms off for the first time because he's got big arms.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, so he's secretly working out.
And, Kate, like you were saying, Toby is worried about Kate because she hasn't missed a beat. And she seems to be remaining upbeat and positive. And she even tells the people at one point, she's like, look, we're not going to have the house like this. We're not going to, baby-proof this entire place because this house that he is raised in is not going to be built on fear. It's going to be built on hope.
Yeah.
And that's the message I want him to get. And she's, inspiring them all and making them all feel good. She goes, yeah, and you know what? We're going to have cords. We're going to have cables. But, we've got that big TV over there. They're going to mount it tomorrow, and he's going to be watching the Steelers as soon as he can. And then it just, hits her.
Like, yeah.
He'll never watch the Steelers. She's basically going to have to narrate what's going on.
Yeah. Well, you can watch football on the radio.
Right.
And then Toby's like, yeah, but you can explain everything that's going on to him just like you did to me when I didn't understand it.
Yep. But it hit her because that was the thing that her and her dad always shared. And just thinking that, he's not going to be able to immerse himself like I would like.
Yeah.
So.
And then Randall's story in this as an adult is him and his wife and the three kids. He wants to have a Randall fun family fun
Pearson
day.
Pearson family fun
Pearson day. Family fun day before they go back to school.
It's mirroring the pool day.
But one of the middle daughter now, not the oldest, she wants to get a haircut.
She needed it.
She said,
you told me that right before school started, I could get my hair cut. And that's why I've been letting it grow out all summer. And holy crap, has it grown out.
Yeah, and Deja wants to ride the bus to school every day by herself, but Randall's afraid, so they're supposed to go on a bus.
And that's not a school bus, that's a metropolitan bus.
Exactly, but she still wants to ride the bus to school by herself. And she's like, I was riding the bus, New York or whatever it was, or New Jersey, by myself when I was younger than this. And Randall's like, yeah, well, your mother didn't give a shit. He doesn't say that, but. So they're going to test it out, and some guy sits next to Randall and sits next to Deja because Randall's going to sit away from her at Deja's bequest because this is how it's going to be. And one guy sits next. I like Randall. How Randall explains to his wife, the bus ride didn't go well because I got all super dad as soon as one guy sat down next to her, and I was like, nope, this isn't happening, and I overreacted.
Yeah, at least he owns it.
But he asked Deja why it's so important that she rides the bus. It's because, because this is her new city that you moved me to, and I want to feel like it's my city, and this is something I used to do, and it gives her a feeling of, that this is where she belongs.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
And she calls him Dad.
Right.
Yep. So, it's good. But we also see she secretly takes a photo of Malik as they drive by the garage.
Yes.
And he does say, see you at school tomorrow. So last week's episode, the reason why he wasn't at school or at working during the day is because it was still summer vacation.
Right. And Tess did get her hair cut. Really short.
Super short haircut.
Yeah. And Mom was upset because she's like, people always say that we look like each other. And, she's always been a mirror image of me. And now I feel like, we won't have this connection anymore.
Yeah.
She got it cut super, super short. And Beth is like, you know what? I had my doubts, but it looks awesome. Congrats.
It was a good episode, actually.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked when they played worst case scenario game and Deja jumps on it straight away. And I can't remember what she said, but this is where she's like, then my dad kills someone.
Yeah.
The youngest daughter, her worst case scenario is that her friends back home are going to forget about her, but oh well. And then, is that how you really feel? No.
No.
And then the middle daughter, she doesn't have anything.
Yeah.
And Randall's worst case scenario is that Deja's not going to text her the second he gets to school, let her know every day that she's at school, and so he's going to let her ride the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a teenager, after all.
Right.
So it was a good episode, actually.
It was.
Yeah, all the stories melded together really well, but they really have. Other shows write for this type of, all these different characters going on and everything.
Right.
But really, This Is Us does a pretty fantastic job melding them all together.
I agree.
So I did watch a show that I don't know if you've watched yet or not, so I'm going to bring it up anyways. Did you watch the Netflix original series Criminal UK?
No, not yet.
Okay, I have watched all three episodes.
There were only three.
There's only three, and this is why. It's a Netflix original series. There's 12 total episodes, but it's represented by four countries.
Right.
Three episodes each country.
Oh, so the UK one is first.
But they're all, no, all four shows are on Netflix, but they're all in their own slots.
Okay.
So it's Criminal UK, Criminal Germany, Criminal France, Criminal Spain.
Gotcha.
And so there's three episodes, like I said, but it's not like it's the same three episodes for each series in their own language. They're all different. They want you to watch all 12. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're subtitled, but they're in their native languages.
So UK probably isn't subtitled?
I actually had them turned on because I...
Yeah, the accents.
No, not even the accents, actually. I had it turned on because of the... on my TV, at least, like, one guy was talking really loud and clear, and the other one's muttering and talking quietly, and I had to rewind it, and gotcha. I don't want to turn the TV up too loud, because, you know, anyways, so I had the subtitles on just so I could watch them better.
It looks good. Is it good?
It's okay.
Okay.
I mean, I enjoyed all three episodes.
They all take place inside of an interrogation room, right?
Every scene in the show, and the show is about 43 minutes each, is an interrogation room. The room that overlooks the interrogation room and the hallway. And I'm pretty sure they filmed all four series in the same set.
Okay.
Because I watched the trailer that had all four of them, and it pretty much looks identical, the rooms and everything like that.
Okay.
The first episode, the suspect, because they don't hide this, is David Tennant.
Okay.
Second episode's Haley Atwell. Third episode is Yosef Kerkow. I don't know who it is.
Okay.
But, and I don't really recognize any of the police or the solicitors or anything like that. But I enjoyed it. I mean, there is an overarching story with the police as well.
It's, okay.
You know, minor storylines. But the three episodes themselves otherwise are standalone.
Okay.
And, they're decent. It's, you don't have, like, you know, like on The Closer, or I guess the best way I can describe it, you know, the dramatic scenes you have with, like, Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson on A Few Good Men, where he convinces Jack Nicholson to, like, or tricks him into confessing.
You can't handle the truth.
Yeah. You don't have those big dramatic things going on in this. It's almost more realistic of how it happens.
Okay.
But it was decent. I would definitely recommend you give it a watch.
Oh, I definitely.
If they had more episodes, I would watch more episodes. I wasn't, like, blown away.
Okay. So.
Oh, hell. Stumptown?
Stumptown.
So, I really think I'm annoyed a little bit with how much Colby Smulders gets beat up in the show.
She really does.
I mean, if she was a Marine veteran, I feel like she could take care of herself. She gets beat up a lot.
Yep. Yeah, she does. I kept having to go back and check. I'm like, doesn't she have some kind of training?
Yeah.
Doesn't she have something going on?
Yeah. We get to see some flashbacks, which I enjoyed, of how Dex and Gray met.
Yep.
And how they had a one-night stand, but it got kind of ruined because the alarm went off, and then she needed a ride, and then he took her to buy a new car.
And that's not the alarm as in, like, an alarm clock.
No, she was trying
to sneak out of the apartment, and the alarm went off. And he's like, don't touch it. The fire department will come. Hold on. And he had to deactivate it.
But I really enjoy, like, the cut-ins with this episode of how they met and their relationship and how they kind of got better and got along with each other, and how he met her brother, and then how they became friends. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's like he takes her to go buy a car because she needs a ride to go do this. And he's like, you can't buy this car. Why? Because it's going to break. And then I'm going to be fixing it. Like he's already taken up stake in her life of some kind. And he does ask her out on a real date to go to dinner, and she freaks out and goes on a binge. And so he goes, okay, so that doesn't work for you. But you know what? I enjoy hanging out with you. I think you're a nice person. So let's just not cross that line again. And they haven't.
Right.
This is the contrary to how a man and a woman can be friends together.
Mm-hmm.
And people just assume it can't happen.
On TV shows,
it usually happens where, oh, they'll fall in love and all. No, they've already had sex.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out that they don't work together. We also meet Grace.
I have a couple of female friendships like that right now.
We meet one of Gray's former friends because we find out Gray was in prison for a bit and his partner's back and he's begging Gray for some money to pay a debt. And Gray's like, I don't have it. I bought this place.
Yeah.
And then we find him dead at the end.
Yeah. Because there's a crime boss that basically it sounds like they stole the money from this crime boss.
Yep.
The guy's in jail.
Yep.
And, you know, as Gray says, he's like, he's not getting out. Who cares? And he's like, no, he's going to send people after us. He wants his money. Mm-hmm. I can get my half. Where's your half? Nope.
And then we have the Dex's storyline. Go ahead with it. Her case this episode.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, so this time she has a guy who basically Gray sets her up. He's like, hey, take this drink over to that guy. And the guy's like, I heard you can help me find this woman. He basically met a girl at a bar. She gave him a fake phone number. And he's like, I'll pay you $1,000 to track her down. And at first, Dex was like, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to track. She gave you a fake number. Just deal with it. And he goes, I'll give you $1,000. She's like, okay, I'm going to need some more details. She finds out where the woman lives and meets up with an abusive guy who's beating the crap out of the girl, screaming at her, throwing stuff around. He beats the crap out of Dex. She finally gets the better of him. It turns out that this girl is a grifter. She's a con woman. She works with a partner.
Yeah.
So basically, Dex hooks them back up. She's like, oh, you know, I found her. And they fleece this guy out of – they try to – it was really genius the way that Dex and Gray got the number added.
Yes.
We added this phone number for fraud alerts so that if any fraud alerts, we call you. Yeah, the women try to get like $50,000 out of his bank account.
Yeah.
They get turned down for fraud alert. So – he goes into the bank and takes it out, and he's like, oh, she wants to get out of the life, and she just needs to buy off her partner, so if she gives her this money, then she'll buy her off. And Dex's like, you're an idiot. Don't do that. Kind of stealthily drops her brother's phone in the car so that she can track him, which was funny because that was a whole thing. Like, he had lost his phone.
Yes. And
she found it. She's like, this could be helpful. And she follows them to the handoff and finds that the ringleader woman there, you know, the partner – kicks her ass as well.
Yeah, she gets into the hotel room and finds that she lies to the maid and's like, oh, my husband's cheating on me or something like that, and gives the maid like $20. And so she gives her the key. They open the door, and the guy's tied to a chair with a plastic bag taped around his head.
Yep.
And then Dex immediately starts fighting the other girl
who
whoops her ass. Yeah.
But in the end, she goes down. The
Dex, nice, Dex wins. Yeah.
The nice girl says, oh no, she was really bad. She basically tells this sob story to the police and gets away with it.
Like, yeah.
She gets out and she's going to be the girlfriend of this rich guy.
Oh, and this guy's rich, by the way. Like, oh, super rich.
Rich. Yes. He's from a wine family.
Yeah.
You know, wine legacy family.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is Hoffman, the officer, and then Cosgrove, his boss there. Like, they end up arresting Dex because she went into a house where the door was unlocked, but that's breaking and entering technically, because even if the door is open, it's still, you know, trespassing. And basically the boss is just, Cosgrove is just like, you're garbage, or not you're garbage, but just doesn't think much of her. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you don't have a license to be a PI, doesn't think a whole lot of her, just, you know, whatever. And Hoffman is telling her, like, there's something about this girl, she's got smarts.
Yeah, and she figured this stuff out. She was ahead of us.
And then by the end, Cosgrove actually says to Dex, it pains me to say this, but you had really good instincts on this. You know, you did a great job. If you really want to be a PI, do it the right way. Get the training. Get the license.
Yep.
Which, considering how she's treated her these first two episodes, that's pretty high regard.
But it's kind of nice, too, because here's a show that – doesn't just start off with, oh, I'm a private investigator, blah, blah, blah. No, she's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And now, she might be becoming a private. She's, like, kind of fallen into it.
Yeah. And she's kind of gotten arrested a couple of times for breaking actual laws.
Yep.
And instead of just giving her a pass and kicking her loose or whatever, or you know what I mean? Because it's the show. No, they're like, no, she's being charged with this because this is a crime she committed. But then at the same time, like you said, get your license. So hopefully that's what we're going to see is in the upcoming episodes is her getting her license.
Right.
Going through the process.
But
of course, episode 3 will probably pop in and be like, well, I got my license. You happy?
Yeah. No, I hope not. I wouldn't mind seeing this stretch out for the entire, like, season.
Yep. I really do enjoy this show, though, so it's definitely one that I'm going to stick with.
Yes, I feel the same way.
Are you watching Prodigal Son?
I am.
All right. Great second episode, The Family Annihilator.
Yeah, this was awesome.
Yeah.
His dad basically keeps reaching out to him by phone because he's like, how are you getting a phone? He goes, oh, I have phone privileges. I just usually keep them for my patients, but I've been saving them up so that I can call you. And he keeps calling him and trying to get a hold of him because he's an addict for that. You know, now that his son has seen him once, he wants to see him more and more and more. And, yeah, they're dealing with a family annihilator who essentially killed all the members of this rich bitch family. And as they look at, you know, it looks like a Last Supper kind of thing. They're all sitting around the table. They're all dead. But as he looks at it, he's like, look, this was not a family dinner. They were all forced to come here. You can see it. They've got four different meals, four different place settings. They were served by different people. You know, they didn't want to be here. Dad made them do it. Dad was the last to die. So he was forced to watch the kids die.
They have their own condiment trays.
Yes. Yes. So he's like, this was staged. And then as they're going over the scene, snakes start crawling out.
Oh God. They take the gag off Dad's mouth and snakes come out of its mouth. Yeah. Black mambas.
Yep. And it was cool at first. And then when we got the scene of him like grabbing the snake as it lunged, it was terrible CGI. Like that was right up there with Manifest.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
That was horrible. But which, by the way, is coming back for a second season.
Oh fuck, really?
Yeah, I haven't read anything. I just saw a headline the other day that said talking about behind the scenes and upcoming changes. And
well, I look forward to watching that with Kate. We can talk about how much we hate it.
That's right. It's a great
time to group watch our favorite show that we hate.
All right, everybody, get out your dicks. We're going to piss all over this thing.
Which the interesting part is there is a member of the family that's not dead,
mm-hmm.
and they first blame him, but then the detective there, Malcolm.
Bright.
Malcolm Bright. He decides, wait a second, this can't be him.
Because he doesn't like the family enough to care.
Exactly.
To kill them.
So then they end up going to talk to the attorney, trying to get some more information out of him to see if there's any. To see, okay, because the attorney was helping them make payments to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to go find out what it was.
And they were all killed with doses of beta blockers enough to stop their hearts.
And as it turns out, the attorney is the bastard son and loved the family, and then when he went into and got the job working for them as the attorney, and then we went and told them what was what, and confronted Dad about it, or whatever. He was just basically like, "Yeah, fuck off."
Yeah, yeah. They shunned
him. Here's $50,000. Go away.
Yep.
And now he's killing not only himself but his kids and wife.
Dude, when they come to just ask him questions, like they didn't suspect him at this point. They just came to ask him questions.
He was already in the process.
He was having a barbecue out in the backyard with the kids. And they were running around and they're like, oh, can we have our food? And he's like, yeah, here you go. And he's cooking it all up. And they're like, wait, you know, Bright kind of figures it out. And he's like, it was you. You're the kid. And he goes, yeah, I love that job.
And then he just admits it.
Yeah. He admits the whole thing. And he's like, well, why are you admitting this? You don't plan on being arrested, do you?
And he turns and the family slumped over and the little girl's falling off the swing.
Yeah, he killed his entire family. Like,
yeah.
First the extended family,
yep.
Now his daughters and his wife.
However, because it's beta blockers, they figure out giving them some epinephrine or whatever it is, atropine, to get their heart pumping. They,
yep.
Of course, she happens to have some in the med kit in the back of the police vehicle.
A little bit of an eye roll there.
Bit of it. But, so he injects all of them, and they all come back to life, if you will.
I love it when he's looking at the guy.
Well, that's the thing, is that they want you to think that he's not going to give him the injection. He's just going to let him die.
Because the guy even says that. He's like, please don't. And I don't want to live.
No. He gives him the injection.
He goes, so. I know.
Well, maybe that's the evil part of him. He knows he doesn't want to let him. He knows he doesn't want to live, so he's not going to let him die.
Right.
Emergence.
Yes.
You watch it?
Yep.
What'd you think of episode two?
I thought it was good. They still haven't answered much of anything. They gave us a few new things here. They've got a security system because the girl wakes up and she's like, somebody's in the yard. And
there was.
Yep.
There's somebody from the...
It's not the NTSB.
No, but wherever it is that's from. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to find the card.
Yep.
And he can't find it.
Which, it's the size of a card. It has holes punched out, yeah. You know, like squares punched out, but it's really thick.
Yeah, and it opens up in this episode as well.
Yeah.
So, well, she installs a new security program system in the house. And I watched this so long ago, I don't even know if I can deep dive in it. Basically, the long and the short of it's this. She decides that these people are not going to stop coming for her. So she's just going to go public.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not going to go public and say, oh, this girl survived this plane crash and this is this. She's going to go public and say that, oh, she's the tragic survivor of a car crash. And so she's going to foster the child and adopt her.
Yep.
And this and that. And so that way it's like she's made it public that, hey, I have this kid. Stop coming for me.
Right.
Type of thing. Which was a smart thing to do.
It was. Yes. Hidden in plain sight kind of thing.
Exactly. Yes. Because she was honest. And I loved it when she was talking to the journalist. She's like, this is what's going on. She lays it all out, the truth and everything. Then she goes, but you're not going to write about that.
And she says that like four times.
Yeah. You're going to write about this. And that's what he does.
Yep.
But we meet this guy who... he's trying to cover everything up. So he's trying to find the card and he can't find it, but he finds the chip or whatever it was that she cut out of her neck mm-hmm. in the sink drain, which that came apart way too easy. And that water was way too gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, and then he goes to get the car that crashed. And how did not everybody notice how magnetized it was
right?
and not saying anything about it?
Right. There was shit all over.
Like, not only is all this metal and stuff stuck to it, but inside the cab of the vehicle, shit's just floating around because it's so magnetized.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this big fight that happens. The guy pulls
Which
his gun
hilarious.
Out. The guy pulls his gun out. It gets sucked to the car. She pulls her gun out. He knocks away. It gets magnetized. You know what I mean? It gets magnetized away. They're fighting over this and that. The patrolman's there. They're all fighting, trying to like stop this guy.
The patrolman fires a bullet and it's the car.
Yeah, it gets magnetized to the car and ricochets, and then they fist fight. And then I love it when Jill goes, hey! And he looks up, and she's holding a sledgehammer. She just lets it go.
Yeah,
and it hits him in the face. And when she later says, like, to the little girl, like, cause, and then the little girl confesses to her, like, I think this is me. I caused the plane to crash. I caused the car to crash.
Things happen when I'm
upset or get nervous or stressed
out. She had
out.
Those flashbacks of like an all white room and a scalpel
yeah.
cutting a guy. And then like when she woke up, the piece of paper that she'd been writing on just kept saying don't all over it.
Yes.
Because that's what the person was saying in her dream
it's,
vision.
It's supposed to be some sort of like memory journal if she remembers anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad she was honest with Joe about things. Yes. I hate it when they cover things up and then you find out later. Just, yeah, they're handling things right.
Yep.
What was the other show that we liked how much? In the In-Between.
Yes.
Yeah. I hope that comes back.
I do, too.
I really do. But, yeah, I thought this was a good episode. It was fun. I still don't see Turk and Joe there together as a couple.
I don't either.
But whatever. It is what it is. Oh, so Joe says, oh, that guy's not going to come back. His face got crushed or something like that. And then you see him in the hospital.
Yeah.
And his face is all bandaged up and he's in a coma or whatever and he's sewed up. But then, like, his monitor blinks that symbol.
Yeah.
So he's, like, one of her. Is she an alien? Who knows?
I just hope.
Altered human, probably.
I know that they said that they're not going to keep us guessing all season. Like, there will always be mysteries, but they're not going to, like, hide it all.
Right.
I really hope that we do get some good, solid answers. It doesn't have to be in the next episode, but, you know. I don't want to keep dragging our feet, like with Manifest or John Doe, which I loved. And then they canceled it prematurely and we never got any answers.
Yeah, that was the shits.
The screaming green shits.
Mm-hmm. That's how much shows, I think.
No, it's not.
What else?
The Rookie.
Oh, the premiere.
Yeah.
All I was thinking is I didn't watch last night's episode yet.
No, you watched the premiere.
I did. That was excellent, actually.
Started off right where we left off in the last season. Tim going into shock.
No. Like, directly right off. Like, they filmed it last year, I feel like, type of thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tim's going into shock. They throw him in the ambulance. They're driving along. Somebody makes the realization that there was another terrorist because there was a...
No, it's Nolan's girlfriend basically realized, oh, she texted somebody else. There was a third terrorist.
Right. Yeah. And that terrorist happens to be waiting right at the hospital with an assault rifle.
I think she's
going to finish this. Or
I think she showed up to kill them, yeah.
Yeah. Or well, she got there before they did because she was set up and ready.
Yeah. And gets into a shootout with everybody.
And
a dramatic shootout.
Okay. Look, I love this show. I really do.
Yeah.
But my God, right out loud, I went, are you fucking kidding me? When Nolan forgot to reload. On the run. He forgot to reload. He should have done it beforehand. He goes to grab his next thing and slam it in. The back of the ambulance opens up. Tim comes out, guns ablaze, and boom, boom, takes her right down.
Yeah.
Really?
You want to know why I'm okay with it? He was having an allergic reaction. They gave him epinephrine, and it gave him, made him breathe again.
Oh, that's not the part that I had a problem with. The part that I had a problem with was the Michael Bay entrance.
Oh, no. I thought it was great.
Oh, no.
Oh, just like later in the episode when he gives Chen shit for not reporting that he had made suicidal statements. Well, I thought I'd leave that out. Well, you shouldn't have.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, well, if you want to self-sacrifice, that's fine, but don't treat me like shit because of it.
Oh, yeah. And she's like, just the same way that I should have said, I should have reported the fact that you were giving preferential treatment to your ex-wife, the drug user.
Yeah.
Should have done that. I don't hear you reaming me out for that.
That's because the captain tells the rookies that they can wear. They all pass their test. He puts their scores up.
It was 97, 91, and 81.
Yeah.
And 81 is 1 point away from failing.
Yep. And so.
But he won't tell them who.
He wants them to guess who got what for a score.
And basically suffer for the rest of the day.
But they can wear short sleeves. Mm-hmm. But Tim makes Chen wear long sleeves and a tie and a cover because you're still my boot and you'll do what I say.
And they basically...
But hold on. That whole opening thing is the pre-credit screen. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to, oh, Nolan just had 2 weeks off. And he's talking to his girlfriend. He's got his own place now that he's fixing up. And then they basically... the actress that left the show, Talia. They basically explain, oh, Talia took a job with whatever. ATF. Because, after lying about her brother, you know she's never going to go into
a detective. Like she wanted to, so, you know, this was the best move for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a good job. They didn't slander her or anything, which was nice. And she's still open to come back, if that ever happens.
Right.
So basically Nolan says that. He's like, so, sir, who do I ride with? And he's like, well, you're riding with me. Oh, goody. What's her name there? I can't think of her name. West's T.O.
Yeah.
She is now living with her boyfriend. And she's never lived with anybody before. And this is an odd couple kind of thing. Diaz. So this is an odd couple kind of thing where, you know, like he opens up the shower and in the soap tray is a grilled cheese sandwich. And he's like, when did you make grilled cheese? She goes, oh, last night. Picks it up and eats a bite out of it.
He goes, I don't remember this place being as messy before I moved in. She's like, well, yeah, of course. I'd spend 2 hours cleaning before you got here because I had to impress you, but now I don't have to.
Right. I could just be myself.
He's like, well, we could still maybe, like, I don't know, clean up a little bit.
And I like that the fight carries over into the patrol car and they've got the homeless guy in the back and he talks about the grilled cheese in the dish. And the guy's like, I live under an overpass and even I think that's pretty gross.
In the end, West has the lowest score.
Yeah.
Nolan has the highest, and Chen's got the middle.
Yeah. Tim rides her hard.
Yeah.
He won't let her wear the short sleeves. He's mean to her. He takes her over to a park, and he's like, I got a friend of mine who mocked up a fake IED. It's somewhere in this place. You have 10 minutes to find it or else. And she's like, you're serious? And he's like, move. And she finds it in a trash can, and she's like, oh, I found it. And picks up her phone to call him.
She goes, I found it. And he goes, what?
Yeah. Yeah. So she picks up her phone to call him and it detonates because.
Which radio frequency set it off.
She used the radio, not the cell phone. Yeah. So.
And it was powder and stuff that like.
It was like white paint. Yeah.
And he's like, go get cleaned up.
Yeah. Mark Cuban had a little cameo in here.
Yeah.
Some guy was trying to pitch him an idea.
At a restaurant, was harassing him.
Yeah. But the overarching crime on this one was they went to get a fresh uniform for Nolan, and yes, the regular guy wasn't there minding the store. It was some guy with gold teeth, and there were people who were stealing cop uniforms. And the overall, like, they kept catching wind of this, wind of that. They found one guy who was going through police cruisers in the garage. Chen found him, and he was stealing a radio out of one of the cruisers. And they were like, well, why would he care? You know, they can listen to the police band on any scanner program. Yeah, but if they have a radio, they can actually talk to us.
Right.
And these people were...
And it's not like Augusta Police or even State Police where you don't know... You don't know everybody who's out on the road. I mean, this is L.A.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So, essentially, they were trying to hijack a shipment of contraband drugs, you know, evidence that was being destroyed. Every 3 months, it gets destroyed.
Yeah.
After crimes, cases are done, etc. And they stop them. But once again, it's the rookie, so all the bad guys have assault rifles and have a big old shootout with them. Yeah, West found out he had the low score, and he kind of, my note was he went all book smart on the rookies.
Yeah.
You know, he stood in front of him, and he's like, yeah, I did everything that I was supposed to, and this is all that I wanted, and I worked my ass off, and
not the rookies, it's like the youth police type of thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The cadets from the youth police program.
And he's like, and I was wrong, so you should go out, and you should party, and you should do what you want. You
live your life.
Fun, and,
yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. Yeah. I like that he now has to wear the pink shirt of shame. It's got an 81 on it. And they're like, Bradshaw had it made up for Chen, but since it's you now, here you go.
And he just goes like, fair enough.
Yeah.
And another arcing story is Nolan and his girlfriend, they're not getting along very well because he sees the gold tooth guy is the motorcycles they got away on, and he's murdered and he's burnt up with the motorcycles, and Nolan goes and sees, and they recognize it's him based on his gold tooth, and so Nolan throws up, of course, because it bothered him, and she's like talking on the phone, laughing, standing over this guy's dead, charred remains, and he's just like, I don't want to be that.
Right.
It's almost like my wife said to me, do you really want to be known as the guy that can listen to people die on the phone and you don't get worked up about it and you manage to stay calm? Not really. No. He was kind of feeling that same thing, except it only took me 18 years to come to that conclusion. It took him, you know, one.
Yeah.
But then he tells her that, and she's like, I fell in love a little bit with you. Want to have the sex? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, we're going to my place because you got holes in your walls here.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, it's not that she's a bad person.
No.
She's just been doing this for so long that you get jaded. You
get
know?
It. I get that.
I was only a dispatcher for a year.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, yeah, I have a different mindset anyway. So I'm closer to you as it is. But yeah, by the end of it, you're just sitting there and you're like, uh-huh, yeah. And you don't want to.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't want to be that guy.
It should bother you. But for her, it's just she sees so much of it.
Yep.
That, yeah.
All right. So we're done shows now.
Well, for now,
I am. What do you got?
No. I was going to say... Yeah, you know, we still got Mr. Robot.
But Mr. Robot, it's different, yeah.
I did watch the fourth episode of Disenchantment. Fucking love that show.
I think I'm only on three, so. Oh,
love it.
Did you ever finish Carnival Row?
Nope.
I haven't gone back to even watch episode three yet.
I still want to. It's
just, I've
got so much going on.
I want to, too, but I don't know. It's like, I really want to watch the Netflix movie In the Tall Grass. It looks great. It's based on a Stephen King novella. I mean, I've heard Johnny watched it. He loved it. So I really want to watch that. But like, we got the new shows from last night to watch. I got wrestling is on every day. I like at least keep up to date on and everything.
A friend of mine messaged me that Raising Neo or whatever, you know, the one about the little kid who's got superpowers on Netflix.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, have you watched this yet? I'm like, no. She's like, okay, I'll let you know. I'm thinking, when am I going to fit that one in?
Yeah.
So.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then Big Mouth just came back on Friday.
Oh, that's right. It did. I really
And did you see that they're getting a spinoff?
Yes. You told me about that.
Yeah. Human Resources.
Yeah.
When am I going to have time for all this?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
So trailers and news? And any movies that you have?
I got one movie I watched besides Joker. I watched In the Shadow of the Moon. It's a Netflix original flick. I do not want to give this away. You need to watch it.
I do need to watch it.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Basically, I'll just lay it down like this. It opens up in 1988 Philadelphia. Well, it opens up in 2024.
Okay.
And you see, like, what maybe it looks like post-explosion or something.
Okay.
Then it goes to 1988. And people mysteriously die. And then it's investigated, and it's a beat cop. And then it jumps to 1997.
Okay.
And it's now that cop's a detective. And the person that they thought committed the crimes in the first one but couldn't have done it now in 1988, no way that person could have done it in 1997, shows up in 1997. And then we jump to 2006. Then we jump to 2015. And then obviously 2024, like the end of it is. So I'm not going to give anything away. Other than what I just said.
In the Shadow of the Moon?
In the Shadow of the Moon.
It is now added to my list.
You need to watch it.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it.
Okay. I have added it to my list.
I really enjoyed it. I recommend if you enjoy a good sci-fi type mystery thriller type movie. Mm-hmm. Not suspenseful, but definitely sci-fi mystery, kind of like what's going on here with some action and everything. Well worth the watch.
Did you ever finish The Island?
Yeah, so we talked about it last week.
Okay,
I couldn't remember. We both said,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, but you were really old the whole time.
Yeah. God, that was stupid. Maybe we didn't talk about it last week, but we don't need to.
No, we don't.
Trailers. You sent me a couple trailers.
Yes, and I watched a couple that I don't know if I sent you.
Okay. Well, the only trailers I really need to talk about. Oh, wife and I watched another movie. Isn't It Romantic?
Oh, yeah, and I had watched it the week before.
We got it off the Redbox. We enjoyed it.
Wasn't it fun?
Yep, it was fun.
Yep, I liked it. Good message, you know, love yourself.
Yeah, I actually really liked that at the end, essentially, where she was like, I love me.
Yeah, so I wasn't supposed to get him to fall in love with me. I was supposed to fall in love with me.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. And then I liked how, like, when she came back to reality, whatever, she went to the office and was just like, do your damn job, Megan.
Yes. I wanted to say that to Megan right from the beginning.
Oh, I did too. Megan. Yeah. But that was really good. And then she walks. He's like, oh, good. Can I get a car? Yeah, that's not my job. This is my job. We'll talk about your parking garage. You find it very beguiling. Liam Hemsworth was excellent in this.
Oh, my God. He was great.
But, yeah, Kate watched it. She enjoyed it. But she's like, I don't need to watch it ever again. I'm fine with that. Yeah, yeah. I can understand that. But, yeah, it was a fun movie we watched together. So
cool.
Trailer I sent you, Lost in Space.
Mike keeps snapping and then pointing at me, like doing this little spin snap and then point. It's like the third or fourth time.
I don't know why I'm doing
it. I don't either. Lost in Space, season two.
So I'll say this. The trailer didn't – I didn't get a whole lot from the trailer.
Me either.
Same thing watching the Letterkenny teaser they gave out. I didn't get a whole lot out of that.
I'm looking for the robot.
Yeah, but
– there were a lot of scenes.
I'll watch it.
Little clips.
Yeah.
Lots of different planets from the looks of it.
I'll watch it at some point.
I will as well. Yeah.
And we both saw the Castle Rock trailer.
Yes. Season 2 of Castle Rock.
Yes. Again.
Misery is coming.
Again, we didn't see a whole lot except we know Annie Wilkes is in it. It's obviously a younger version of her than from the Misery movie.
Yeah.
And
she's looking kind of good.
Yep. So I'm excited about that.
I am as well.
Yep.
Did you see the trailer for Six Underground? Ryan Reynolds. It's a Michael Bay produced thing.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Billionaire. Vigilante criminals.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
Looks good. I hate Michael Bay, but I love Ryan Reynolds.
I know I'm not a big fan of Michael Bay either, but yeah.
It does look good.
I do like Ryan Reynolds a lot.
Birds of Prey. We got a full trailer for that.
Honestly, I wasn't overly excited about it.
I don't know why Obi-Wan there wasn't wearing the black mask. He's Roman Sionis.
God,
why isn't he? If he's black mask, he should be in a black mask.
Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
It's Birds of Prey without Batgirl? That seems wrong.
Yeah.
It's
supposed to focus on the villain.
Did Harley Quinn talk like that in the first movie?
Yes.
Because it was annoying the piss out of me in the trailer.
Yes. Yes, that is how she talks.
Okay.
Maybe
you just hit me wrong, but yeah.
Saw two trailers out of New York Comic Con.
Which I was surprised I didn't see more out of there yet. Maybe I haven't been looking.
I don't think you've been looking.
Okay.
But we saw season 1 of Picard.
Yeah.
I might check that show out.
I'm gonna absolutely watch that show. I'm not.
So you're convinced?
Oh, I was convinced when they went. We're doing Picard.
Holy shit, yeah. Dude! Okay, the first trailer was awesome. It looked like a great show.
Yeah.
The second trailer, they gave us Riker and Troy.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us Seven of Nine actually going to battle and saying that she's out there defending people who can't defend themselves. It looks fucking phenomenal. Picard going toe-to-toe with Starfleet. They're like, this isn't your house anymore. I'm like, oh, you don't fucking tell Picard that he doesn't get to have a say in things. It's Jean-Luc. So, yeah, this trailer was everything. I'm excited.
Me too. Sorry. I'm super free and excited.
Okay.
I don't have a whole lot I need to say about it.
No.
I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
That's it comes out January 23rd. I'll most likely wait for the season to be done, and then I'll get 1 month of All Access, and I'll binge it.
Likewise, we got season 3 of Discovery trailer.
Again, didn't see a whole lot in this one, other than it looks like Michael's separated from them for quite some time, yeah. And then somehow meets up with them.
Yeah, she said that she's been spending time trying to find the catalyst for this.
Yeah, they got separated somehow, but they're 940 years into their future.
Right. The Federation doesn't seem to exist anymore.
It does not seem to, or it's not doing well.
Everyone has interesting guns that are more like ring blasters. They look like Mega Man blasters, basically.
They do.
You know, they got one hand that has like a little Mega Man blaster, and they're firing off bolts at people.
So, I don't know. I really just want to see Chris Pike still.
I know. Well, he's going to be on those little shorts, I believe.
I want to see Anson Mount as Chris Pike. That's what I want. Like, that's the series I want to see. So.
And then, not that you watch it, but they had a trailer finally for season 4 of Rick and Morty. 5 episodes coming in November. They said, it's half the season that you deserve and all the season that you're going to get. Holy shit, it looks great. Rick and Morty is so good. Like, there's one scene where Morty's just sitting there and his face is all red and he's got like this one white streak coming down his forehead. Mm-hmm. And Rick goes, let that salve sit there for 10 minutes to cure you. Do not let it sit there for 12 minutes or I'll have to hunt down what you become. Then at the end of the trailer, you see Morty just turn into basically a 3-winged, 5-armed gargoyle thing and fly out. Damn it, Morty, what did I tell you? And he chases him out in the driveway. It looks great. This is going to be awesome. I'm excited for more Rick and Morty. Looks like we've got more Mr. Poopy Butthole. We've got more Mr. Meeseeks. It looked like Meeseeks were in a whole village, maybe? But, yeah.
Nice.
It's awesome. That's all I got for trailers.
So what we got left to talk about now is the season. Oh, sorry. Oh, hold on. Well, okay. News. And then after that, Joker and Mr. Robot, final season, episode 1. So I don't have any news.
You don't have any news?
No.
I didn't have a lot. The actress Nancy Stevens is returning to play Nurse Marion Chambers in Halloween.
Oh.
Yep.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mentioned this in the movies the other day. That movie 1917 has been shot so that it can be one continuous stretch. Like, it's going to take place in real time.
Okay, I thought parts of it were. I thought, like, this is what I thought, what I got from it, sorry, which was that the main chunk of the movie of them traversing along was shot, one continuous shot, but, like, kind of maybe, like, the beginning when it's nighttime and they're talking, and I thought there was some parts that were. I didn't know the whole movie was, so that's very interesting.
No. After watching a short behind-the-scenes video on the making of the movie, I have to say I'm really excited about this one. Not only is the camera work stunning, but the entire movie is going to be one continuous shot cut together to make the film play in real time in the style of films like Alfred Hitchcock's Rope and Alejandro Iñárritu's Birdman.
Wow, that's impressive.
That is impressive. And I'm not a war movie kind of guy, but
I'm very excited about this.
It looks good, and knowing that makes it look even better, in my opinion.
I feel like we haven't had a lot of movies about World War I. World War II really overshadowed it as far as, which I know that maybe sounds stupid, but no. As far as, okay, when it comes to movies about war, we get a ton of movies about World War II, in Vietnam. Like when we were kids in the 80s, that's what we got. And even in the 90s, we got World War II in Vietnam.
Yep.
Korea kind of got overshadowed. The movie realm, yes, MASH had 11 seasons, but still. And then World War I kind of gets overshadowed. Even later on in life with HBO, we got like Flags of Our Fathers, Band of Brothers, Sands of Iwo Jima, the Pacific, all those based on World War II. You know, like we got those kind of great movies and TV series and everything, but not a whole lot about World War I. So I'm pretty excited about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cherry is coming back for the Punky Brewster sequel.
Okay, I did see that. Yeah.
That's kind of cool. The original actress. And,
too bad Brandon can't.
Dude.
What?
Too soon.
Sorry. He was the dog, if people don't know.
In the What the Fuck news of the week, after Coming to America Part 2 is done filming.
Sure.
Eddie Murphy is planning on doing Beverly Hills Cop 4.
No, I don't believe it. That has been teased for 15 years, so I'll believe that when I see it.
He's quoted as saying, yeah, that's what we're doing after Coming to America 2. We're doing Beverly Hills Cop, and then the plan is to get back on stage and do stand-up. That's what I'll be doing mostly is stand-up. These movies and Saturday Night Live, it's kind of like I'm looking at his bookend. If I decided I wanted to stay on the couch forever, I ended it on a funny note.
I did hear he was going to go back to stand-up.
Yep.
I guess I do have some news. Kevin Smith has announced he's going to do Clerks 3 after all.
Yeah, with
a different script than what he had written previously for Clerks 3.
Yep.
But he and Randall made up.
Yep.
Oh, did you see Brian O'Halloran's going to be in Bangor?
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Nice. For what?
The Bangor Con gimmick they do.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, the one that Rude keeps sharing about with all the rangers that are going to be there that he'll talk about going and then not go.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, Brian O'Halloran's going to be up there.
That's kind of cool.
He was
at Rhode Island Comic Con.
Yeah, and he was cool as shit, but yep. I think we should go up.
Okay. Yeah. Now that you know that you'll have the time off.
Now that I know. So Jen Barbie, every time Rude posts like he's interested in something like the Comic Con, she always comments on it. Too bad you're going to have to work. Oh, you can't go. You have to work.
Let me think. I got one other, I think. Oh, Tom Holland is responsible for Spider-Man coming back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I read that, too.
Yeah, he basically called his people and said, I want Bob Iger's info. And they got him contact info for Bob Iger. And he called him up. And he's like, dude, we need to do this. And Bob Iger said, you know, that he was very sweet and very passionate and, you know, really made a compelling case. And that's what prompted them to get back together with Sony and hash out a deal. So good on Tom Holland.
Yep.
Cool guy. The last piece of news that I have is I didn't realize Sam Raimi is making a new horror anthology.
No way.
Yeah. Sam Raimi, the filmmaker behind such horror hits as The Evil Dead and Drag Me to Hell. Really? They couldn't go with Evil Dead or Army of Darkness. Has unveiled one hell of an impressive cast for his horror anthology, 50 States of Fright. Now, tell me that doesn't sound like a horror movie set in, one different one in each one of them.
Oh, well, yeah.
Set to be released on the forthcoming Jeffrey Katzenberg-founded mobile streaming platform Quibi. The series shares terrifying tales based on urban legends from all across the U.S. Newly announced members of the cast include Christina Ricci and Rachel Brosnahan. For the show, Brosnahan will join Travis Fimmel and John Marshall Jones for the anthology's Golden Arm episode, while Ricci will star alongside Jacob Batalon for a spooky story titled Red Rum. Other stars set to appear, Ming-Na Wen, Tysa Farmiga, and Asa Butterfield and Ron Livingston.
Okay.
Naturally, the show will feature a rotating group of writers and directors, including Sam Raimi, who, as you know, is no stranger to Conjuring, blah, 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 blah. So that's kind of cool. Urban legends from the 50 states.
I can get behind that.
I can as well. All right. So now comes the spoiler-filled part of the podcast. We're going to talk the...
I feel like I'm going to sneeze. Sorry.
The season premiere of Mr. Robot and the movie Joker.
Let's talk about Joker first.
Okay. So if you guys don't want to be spoiled on either one of these things, go away now. You really should be spoiled on Joker, though, because you shouldn't go see it.
A lot of people I know loved it. or thought it was fantastic, or it's a great movie, or...
Oh, yeah, I'm seeing it all over the... You know, these people are like, oh, my God, this is how the DC universe should have started. This should have been the first thing that the DC people did.
All right. Oops, sorry. So I have a lot of mixed feelings about this movie.
Okay.
As I'm sure... Well, as I know you do. But I'll start out by saying Joaquin Phoenix, as an actor, did an excellent job with his character, with the movie, with what, you know, I thought he did an excellent job as an actor.
Committed to the role, yes. Very well.
Yes. And, but that doesn't mean I liked the movie. It just means I thought he did an excellent job.
Correct.
I didn't care. For me, the movie dragged really bad in some parts.
Right.
A couple of times,
from the beginning to the end.
No, I thought there were some good parts, but I thought there were some other parts where the movie just dragged unnecessarily. Like the scene where he's sitting there trying to stretch open his big clown shoes, so you see like his spine, like or the other scenes where it really just shows off how skinny he is. You can see his rib cage as he's stretching, and I don't see what that has to do with anything to enhance or further the story.
Right.
Really, for me, this is what I think happened, and it kind of has a lot to do with what the ticket taker said after the movie, which is someone wrote a script that focused on, but talked about a guy. It's like they watched Falling Down with Michael Douglas and said, let's do this. I'm going to make a script about a guy, you know, and he has some mental health issues, and he lives with his mom, and she's crazy, and he goes on a violent rampage, and it unexpectedly picks up public support and steam, and he is pissed off at this local billionaire, and everyone's blaming this guy, and then he goes on another violent rampage and live on TV, and then he gets arrested, but he kind of gets broken out and this and that, and that's the story. And at the end, you know, he's in an insane asylum, basically. So, wow, that sounds like a great story, but how can we get people to come watch a movie about mental health? Oh, I know. Let's see if we can tie it into some sort of other thing that people go watch, like comic books. Oh, what if we make him the Joker and it takes place in Gotham? And let's make that billionaire Bruce Wayne, Thomas Wayne. Let's make the Asylum Arkham. There we go. Now we got a movie. Like, this could have been a movie that this didn't need to be Joker. It could have been a movie on its own without it. Because you have that, like, yeah, that'll be great. It'll be in the DC universe. And then the director comes out and says, oh, this isn't in canon with the DC universe that we have right now. No.
It's not canon. He will never meet the new Batman.
Yeah.
We're not doing a sequel. And I went to zero comic books for any source material.
Right. Like, this didn't have, like, this could have just been a movie. Like, Taxi Driver's a movie.
Right.
About a guy who has a mental break. Same thing here. But instead, they want to say, oh, no, this is a Joker origin story, so let's go ahead and tie in. It's in Gotham. It could have been in New York City. It could have been generic Donald Trump billionaire guy. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, like, there's nothing else Batman-related in this whatsoever.
Right.
You know? His mother's crazy, thinks the billionaire she worked with, you know, fathered the child.
Oh, and they shoehorn in that Batman origin story right at the
very end. Right at the very end, yeah.
While everybody's going crazy. Now, see, I had problems with all that,
yeah.
As well as you did.
Yeah.
My problems also went to other parts of it. Like you said, goes on a murderous rampage. I don't see it as a rampage.
No.
There were three guys who were kicking the shit out of him on the subway, and he pulled a gun out and shot them dead. Right. And then one of them tried to run away, and he chased him down and shot him, and then
I said he went on a violent spree. Yeah, he had a violent spree that got unexpected public support.
Right, because he killed Wall Street guys.
Right.
And except for, you know, it wasn't Wall Street guys. They were Wayne Tech employees or Wayne
Club Wayne employees. Wayne, yeah, exactly. But they were good boys.
Yeah. So the downtrodden, the, you know, less than 1%, the 98% or 99% or whatever, some of them were like, yeah, screw them. And all of a sudden, because the guy – you know, they thought he was wearing a clown mask. So people started wearing clown masks and saying, yeah, screw the rich.
Yeah.
So one act of violence on the subway suddenly inspired the entire city to go nuts and turn on the wealthy benefactors.
Right. And, you know, Arthur ends up killing his mom. He's delusional a bit when he thinks he has a girlfriend from a neighbor who's he doesn't. He kills this guy that basically got him fired from his job that he loved. You know, like, and he lets the other guy go because, yeah, he always treated me well. So, I mean, like, if they would have just gone all in and said, this is the new Joker for the new Batman movie and this is how we're going to tell his story, maybe I could have gotten behind it more. But it didn't. It just felt like they just tried to kind of, like you said, shoehorn, not just shoehorn the scene where Batman's parents are killed outside the theater and they rip the pearls and the pearls break up and this and that. But they shoehorn this whole movie into saying, oh, this is actually going to be the Joker's origin. And, oh, so now we're going to make this. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the whole DC universe part of this was an afterthought. It wasn't like they said, hey.
It was a coat of paint.
Yeah. It wasn't like, hey, let's write a movie about the Joker. It's like, hey, we have this great script. We could say it's the Joker. Because the scene at the end when he... The scene at the end when he's in handcuffs and the ambulance hits the vehicle and the people there riding in the street and they pull him out of the vehicle and then he's standing on the car kind of like lording all everybody and everything like that.
He takes his own blood out of his mouth
and makes his smiley face. That could be the Joker. That legit could be. Like, I could see that being a scene from as Joker in a Batman movie or comic or something. That's legitimately the only scene in the entire fucking movie that I could see that being.
This is the equivalent of if you bought an old boxy 1970s van.
Yeah.
And you got it all running and it was a good van and you really liked it. And then you painted the outside green and wrote Mystery Machine on the side of it. And people were like, oh, you must be a Scooby-Doo fan. And you were like, who's Scooby-Doo?
Okay, as you're describing this, I was thinking more like you painted it black with a red stripe. And, oh, you got an A-Team van? What's the A-Team?
Right.
That was where my brain was going, actually.
Same kind of thing, you know? Oh, you drive around solving mysteries? No. Why is it called the Mystery Machine? I don't know. It's a mystery.
Yeah. Figure it out.
Because I thought it was cool. Yeah, it was, at best, this was a coat of paint.
Yeah.
They shoehorned that stuff. This movie was an advertisement for Big Tobacco.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
Holy,
there was a lot of smoking
shit.
In it.
Shit. Joaquin Phoenix never stopped smoking. There were scenes where he would walk across the screen and not have a cigarette in his hand, and then a minute later he'd have a cigarette in his hand. He was smoking constantly. He was smoking in his mother's hospital room, sitting there in the... Now, I know in the 80s you could smoke in a lot of other places, but in a hospital room next to all that machinery, I'm just not buying it. But Jesus, like... He never stopped smoking. It was happening all the time. Also, they explained his laugh as a mental condition. And we find out by the end that what happened was his mother was crazy. She had narcissistic personality disorder, delusions. She was a psycho. And she let this guy live with her who was horribly abusive, and he would beat her and he would beat the kid. And they found, when the police finally intervened, they found the kid tied to a radiator with bruises. He was emaciated, probably got head trauma, which makes it so that when he gets really nervous or something bothers him, he just starts laughing uncontrollably. And again, to Joaquin Phoenix's credit, he did an awesome job portraying that.
Yeah, he
like,
did.
He didn't just laugh. Like, he would try to stop himself and he would choke sometimes and like gag. So awesome. He did a great job of that. He really acted this part well. They tried to do so many things, like the whole his girlfriend, Zazie Beetz.
Yeah.
You know, they pulled a Fight Club on us where he goes out on a couple of dates with her and, you know, he goes to her apartment, they make out, and she's there for him in mom's room. And then later on we see that it never happened. He's again, delusional. Fight Clubby.
Yeah.
But they never go anywhere with that. He just walks out of her apartment and he's done.
Yep.
The people of the city were way too quick to jump up and support a guy who did this once. Like, there were other serial killers in the real world or, you know, vigilantes who inspired followings because they did this over and over again. This guy did it once and never resurfaced. He never went back out there
until the
end, killed more people.
Right.
But these people were dressing up in clown masks and standing on the steps of City Hall and protesting. He inspired a movement accidentally on one act. It wasn't like the three people were killed on different nights. This was one act.
Right.
They got gunned down. And everybody loses their fucking mind and rises up. I didn't buy that at all. Look at modern society right now. You see people who rise up, who go in and shoot up a school, and nobody idolizes them.
Because you shot up a school.
This guy shot innocent guys that were on a subway car.
Yeah, but the society hated those guys because they had what they didn't have, which was money and power and things.
Okay.
I'm not trying to downplay what you're saying. I'm not trying to justify what they're saying.
Example,
but like, I really can't think of. Well, okay, all right. You do have the right wing things, like the guy that shot up the naval base a few years ago in Washington D.C. Mm-hmm. Okay, you had people that thought of him as a hero. He was fighting back against the system because he killed adults, not kids.
Yep. Did they take to the streets and wear masks
him? No, they did not. But there was a small smattering of things that, you know, but that's my example. You're right. They didn't take to the streets.
So I think this movie had too many things that it was trying to do. It wanted to show the poverty thing, you know, with the trash piling up on the streets, with everybody impoverished and not knowing where their next job was going to come from. Certainly his job there. I mean, the conditions of that studio were awful, but they never went anywhere with it. Like, nobody really cared in the end whether it was rich versus poor. The same thing with his mental health. You know, we're supposed to empathize with him, but then we kind of don't, but then we kind of do. And they never have a lesson. They never have a moral. They never have a story about, like, how we need to treat people with mental health issues better. His mother, she thought that Thomas Wayne was the father of her child. She sent him letters. We never got any resolution on that, one way or the other.
Well, no. Yeah, and when they met in the bathroom, and Thomas Wayne said, your mother adopted you while she worked for us. She was delusional. She made false claims.
Yeah.
And then when he went to Arkham and saw the file, the adoption paperwork was in the file.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the resolution. She was delusional and lied.
But maybe not, because rich people have a way of making these things happen. So he could have arranged it so that she...
Yeah, see, I don't think they hinted at that at all.
Well, they did later on when Joaquin Phoenix was holding the picture of his mother and flipped it over and it said, I love your smile, T.W.
Yeah, but her mother could have written that. That's how I took that.
Okay.
That's how delusional the mom was. But yeah, I guess I see what you're saying.
One way or another, they never fully answered it. They just,
right.
It was his story versus her story. And yeah, they had to force feed us the stupid Waynes walking down the fucking crime alley, and one random guy in a Joker mask goes, I'm going to go mug them.
Yeah.
And then says, hey, Wayne, you suck, and shoots him, and then shoots the wife, and doesn't even need to take the pearls, just, oh, wait, it's in the comics, I have to do this. Reaches up, grabs them, rips them so that they explode all over the place, and then leaves Bruce alive. I didn't take anything from the comic source material. Really?
That's pretty much shot for shot for every other...
That's pretty much shot for shot for every goddamn Batman story.
This is interesting. I wanted to share this. This is Joaquin Phoenix is playing Arthur Fleck. A mentally ill and perverse stand-up comedian disregarded by society, whose history of abuse causes him to become a nihilistic criminal. Phoenix had been interested in a low-budget character study, and he said the film feels unique. It is its own world in some ways, and maybe it might as well be the thing that scares you the most. Phoenix lost 52 pounds in preparation and has based his laugh on videos of people suffering from pathological laughter. He also sought to portray the character the audiences could not identify with, and he did not look at other Joker actors for inspiration. Instead, he read books about political assassinations so he can understand killers and motivations. Director Todd Phillips said he intentionally left it ambiguous as to whether Arthur becomes the actual Joker as seen in traditional Batman stories or just inspires a separate character.
You know what Todd Phillips did before this, right?
No.
Old School. The Hangover.
Really?
Yeah.
Starsky Road and Hutch. Trip. Due Date? Due Date's phenomenal.
Yeah.
But he also fucking did Borat.
Well, he also recently did an interview where he said that we can't have comedic movies anymore because of woke society. and how everybody's so up in arms about everything and, you know, takes offense to everything. So we can't have good comedies anymore. I've seen plenty of good comedies recently.
I haven't watched Due Date in a long time, but I think I need to watch that again. That's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
So I was not a fan of Joker.
I'll never need to watch it again.
No. No. When people ask me how it was, I tell them that they probably shouldn't go see it. I didn't find it redeeming. I didn't find it beautiful. I did not find it Oscar worthy. Holy crap. Yes, his acting was really good, but Jesus, it was not a good movie. It was not a good story. It was not well done, in my opinion.
Again, I'm going to go with, I think Joaquin Phoenix did a good job as an actor. That's where it ends for me.
Yep.
Anyways, Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot. Now, Sam Esmail had tweeted last week.
Yes.
Saying the premiere of Mr. Robot is coming up on Sunday night at 10 o'clock, yep. Eastern, 9 Central. Watch it live. Do not watch it on delay. You're not going to want to miss this. There's going to be a lot of things that happen. Yep. You're not going to want to, you know, have the internet ruin it, basically.
It was also presented commercial free. So that was huge. So it was a full 63 minutes of TV. So the show opens pretty much literally where it ends it, with Angela and her dad having an argument there on the lawn.
Mm-hmm. I thought that we were still doing, cause they said previously on Mr. Robot.
I know. I thought it was still the previously on. It took me a while to realize that we're watching the new episode. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And basically she's pretty pissed and she wants revenge and her dad's trying to calm her down and this and that. And it's weird because she kind of turns and, like, stops short and, like, just...
You mean when she was walking away?
Like, she turns to walk away and then just stops, like she saw something.
Right, because she had said to him, she was like, if you're not going to help me, I will do this myself. I'm going to take White Rose down.
Yeah.
And then turned to walk away and just froze.
And then he starts talking to her. And it's almost like, did they miss a beat? Because, like, he waited a while before talking to her. And then he's just like, look, I've been trying so hard to protect you, to keep you safe. And, you know, you can't say things like this because, you know, I won't be able to protect you. So you need to, you know, you need to apologize. And he's basically telling her she needs to beg for forgiveness for this and that and everything. And basically she says, and this is where I was confused by it, because believe it or not, I kept waiting for like a sniper to shoot her and take her out based on how things were going. And it wasn't happening. And there was like that really awkwardly long silence between the two of them after she went to walk away and then stopped. Mm-hmm. But like her facial expression didn't change. She just stopped. And then they started arguing again. And basically she says like, I'm not going to run anymore. She goes, so you better just leave. And then she turns and goes and sits down. And then he starts walking away. And I'm like, oh, okay. Did it feel awkward?
Well, it did until you saw what else was going. See, the way that I read it was this.
Sorry.
You know, she turned to walk away from him. She was like, yeah, you know, hell with you. I don't care what you say. Because you're right. He kept telling her. He's like, you know, you need to just drop this. You need to let it go. And she was like, to hell with you. I will do this no matter what. I don't need your help. And she turned and stopped. And she was just like, oh. And he starts talking to her. And then he's like, I really wish you hadn't said that. And then he's like, you need to run. You need to beg, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no, I won't run anymore. And she went and sat down and turned her back.
Yeah.
And then she said, you should walk away now.
Yeah.
And he started walking away and reaches into his shirt and rips out a wire.
Right, which I saw that. And then he does that about the same time. He sees two guys walk past him.
In the masks.
Yes.
The Dark Army masks.
Yeah. And I'm just like, oh. And then they shoot her in the head.
Yep.
And then shoot her a couple more times in the back while she's on the ground. And I was pretty damn surprised. I expected them to grab her and drag her away or something.
Right.
I didn't think they were going to kill her. So that's when I messaged you, like, you know, like, holy shit.
Yep.
And
he walks inside and has the phone conversation with White Rose. she basically calls him and says she made her decision. You know, it's too bad. And he says, you know, it was my daughter. I was trying to protect her. And she's like, yeah, well, sucks to be you, basically. You know, she's like, if you want to blame me for this, go ahead. I've gotten used to it over the years. But, you know, she made her choice. You knew that this was going to happen. You work for us.
So what surprised me was that when she saw that they were there, she's like, she just decided that, oh, I'll just let them kill me then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's what kind of, I don't know, disappoints me is her character just gave up.
Well, I think she was looking at it this way. Like, she knew that they were there to kill her.
Yeah.
No matter what. She knew that her dad was working for White Rose. Yeah. And she knew that her only other option was to either try to run, which she wouldn't get away because these guys were there to kill her, or to beg for forgiveness and keep working for White Rose, which, remember, last season, she was almost catatonic most days because her working with White Rose caused those buildings to be destroyed and yes. all those people to yes. die, and she was blaming herself. So she could have been looking at this as a way to atone. She's like, you know what? Fuck it. If you want to kill me, I deserve to die.
So I guess she just assumed she's going to die no matter what, so she's going to go out on her own terms.
Yeah.
I was still surprised they killed her in the first 8 minutes of the friggin' episode.
I was, too, considering Portia Doubleday's were pretty active on her social media, like, hey, check out Mr. Robot. And her name was still in the opening credits.
Yeah. And then we cut to the opening credits, and then you see Jake Busey, and it says, guest starring Jake Busey, after you see him, which I like that.
Yeah.
And then he fucking kills himself in the later on the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, fucking, his character's done.
Yeah. Which, that was a great... Okay.
You're being way better explaining this than
we me. We need to talk about this, because unlike all the other seasons, Mr. Robot and Elliot are actually working together.
Yes.
They're out at the same time. They're talking. They did some phenomenal camera work in this, where you had both actors, like, trading off. Like,
I love the scene when Darlene shows up at the place.
Yes.
And she's clearly drugged out, and Elliot's talking to her, and he can't get through to her, and he just turns and walks away.
Mr. Robot is talking to her.
Oh, Elliot. And he can't get through to her, so he just turns and walks away, and Christian Slater, you know, Mr. Robot, steps in.
But he's like, right, it was almost like he walked out of his skin.
Yes, and he's now Mr. Robot's talking to her, this and that, and everything.
And Elliot's just sitting over on the couch watching the whole thing happen.
Yeah.
And then she gets mad. Elliot says something like, Angela's dead, and she actually turns from Mr. Robot to Elliot on the couch and says, don't you think I know that? Like, she goes nuts on
him. She doesn't say she's in. She believes she's alive somewhere. She saw.
That's why she was there because she saw her.
They sent Elliot a picture of her of Angela dead, and he obviously hasn't shared it with Darlene yet.
Yeah, and he said that he won't because it'll break her heart.
Yeah.
And once again, that was awesome because you just see him standing there at the computer, like as Mr. Robot says that to him. You know, he's like, you still haven't shared the picture with her. And we get like a single frame of the picture. Like it's one of those blink and you'll miss it kind of things. And you just see like flash. It's the picture. If I had paused and gone back, I'm sure that I could have seen it, mm-hmm. but I just accepted it for what it was, which was just a brief fleeting snap. Love that. But yeah, so Mr. Robot calls Jake Busey's character Freddy. They had a package delivered to his Christmas party in the office, and it's webcam footage of him cyber sexing a young girl.
Yep.
And Mr. Robot calls him and says, hey, you know, it's all fine and good when you're doing it by yourself, but then if the rest of the office were to see that, then it's a criminal thing. And they blackmail him to get his not any files on his computers, but his inbox. They want a backup of his Outlook inbox. They want the PST file so that they can go through the emails. And it's Mr. Robot talking to him the whole time, guiding him through, getting him down into the subway until he gets there. And then it's Elliot. And Elliot takes over, doing the narrating, doing the talking. Beautiful. Loved it.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great.
And then come to find out he's still wearing his badge, his work badge, that has a Bluetooth sensor in it. And so the Dark Army was able to follow him. They separate. He told Elliot... You know, Elliot found the bank that White Rose is using. Oh, yeah. There's the one scene. Awesome. Elliot found the bank that White Rose is using and through the emails that Jake Busey gave him, Freddie. And he basically says, you know, I need a contact. I need a name. And he's like, nope, I don't have a name. I don't have a name. And then he thinks about it and he goes, I might have a name. It's like John Fortin.
John Ranson.
Yeah, John Ranson. Yep. And
Oh, you know what it was? Okay, I'm sorry. Elliot's talking to him, and they're on the train together, and he's like, basically, Elliot's like, well, this is the Dark Army, this is White Rose, your name keeps coming up, you're funneling money for them, unknowingly, possibly, and he's like, oh, shit, they're gonna kill me, you know, like, this is bad, you know, because he shows up with a gun and threatens Elliot to take it down, burn all the copies, and Elliot's like, yeah, it's not going to work. Just put the gun away.
Yeah, you're going to do that in front of all these people, and then you're going to go to jail, and your daughters are going to wonder why, and it's
the video's going to get released anyways.
Yeah.
But basically, he's just like, well, how can you protect me from the Dark Army?
And that was after they got separated.
Yes, and he realizes Elliot can't. That's when he tells him the name, and that's when he's like...
He says, just don't show the video to my daughters.
And then he kills himself.
Blows his brains out, yeah. So... Elliot and Mr. Robot do a deep dive on John Ranson, but it turns out that they didn't have to do that deep of a dive. They found his social media. Elliot's getting a little impetuous.
Yeah, because Mr. Robot's like, look, we took longer to do this. Mm-hmm. We don't have that time for this guy. I know, but we need to look into this stuff more and on and on and on and try and figure this out.
And we get Mr. Robot actually addresses us.
Yes.
He's like, I know I never get to talk. He never lets me talk, but you're here. You came back, right? Because you're a friend. Well,
yeah.
He needs you more than he may realize that he needs you. And it's, again, it's so awesome. He's addressing us the way that Elliot's always been addressing us.
And Elliot just wants to basically dive in with both feet on this guy to get to his house and find him. And Mr. Robot's like, we need to be careful.
Yep.
You know, we're not vetting everything properly. Well, we don't have time.
Yep. Turns out that he was right.
Yeah.
Mr. Robot was right. So they find the place. And like you said, Darlene shows up at one point, and Darlene is coked out of her mind.
Yeah.
Darlene is doing anything she can to forget because she feels responsible for everything going on, plus Angela.
Yeah.
And Elliot's like, we're not responsible for Angela. And then basically just tells her to get out.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have time to deal with this because he's doing shit. They bring up Flipper. You know, she's like, where's Flipper? And he kind of like pauses for a minute, and then he's like, the landlord took her for a week. Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. Well, what are you doing? Nothing.
Yeah.
You need to leave.
Yeah. We also see that Darlene is having a party at her place, and some girls are going through Angela's room, and she freaks out and kicks everybody out because of that.
Okay. Did you see the girl when Darlene grabs the one girl and throws her, the one hides in the closet?
Yeah.
And then never leaves?
No, she did.
Oh, I didn't see her run out. I thought she was still hiding there when Darlene threw
Because
her
Darlene's friend came over, and she's like, you need to relax. And while she's doing that, the girl, like, peeks out and
I didn't see her do that.
Yeah,
I thought it was even funnier that, like, the actress forgot to leave the scene, basically.
Nope. Oh, she definitely did. So, yeah, she freaks out, kicks everybody out of the apartment, curls up crying, holding Angela's ballet shoes.
Yeah.
She's losing it. She's bad. The whole world is really bad. Like,
yeah, the world they're living in.
It's a dark show.
Yeah. And what was the guy that was the face of the company?
Tyrell Wellick.
Tyrell, who we thought was going to be going down and going downhill. All of a sudden, he's like the savior.
He's not only the savior, but he's kind of a figurehead now.
Yes.
They basically use him as their mouthpiece and to say, you know, you've got this PR meeting, this PR meeting.
And even after, like, the buildings blew up and all that, you know, this E-Coin has managed to survive and thrive and is even bigger now.
Yeah. And Elliot says, you know, everybody stopped talking about it. Everybody stopped talking about 5-9. They stopped talking about the buildings. They're getting on with their lives, and we can't let White Rose get away with this.
Didn't they kill Tyrell's wife?
Yep. In that car crash, remember?
Yeah.
Wife and baby.
Like, she got shot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah. So, Elliot and Mr. Robot find the building that this John guy lives in. And Mr. Robot's like, this is an E-Corp building. This whole building is owned by E-Corp. And Elliot's like, E-Corp owns like 50% of Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know?
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
We just have to, you know, jump onto his Wi-Fi.
We've got the doorman who's sitting down there eating some Fruity Pebbles, not caring about anything. They go up to the 7th floor. He says they've got a delivery for this guy on the 7th floor. They go in, and right from the get-go, the door is open.
Yeah.
You know, they tap on it. It's open. The whole place is staged. Like,
yes.
Everything's set up like it's a display house.
Everything's got dust on it. The pictures have the photo frames have the photos that came with the picture with the UPC on them. Mr. Robot says to Elliot, we need to get out of here. This isn't right. What if this guy comes back? And Elliot's just like, well,
Oh, Elliot's excited.
We lucked out. Yeah. We got to search this place from top to bottom. We got to find out what's happening.
Yep.
Yeah.
So then we get another cool scene where basically the doorman puts on Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Really loud.
And it plays as he watches on the monitor. The two E-Corp goons go up to the seventh floor. They grab Elliot. They drag him kicking and screaming out.
Yep, because then, the door locks behind them and they can't open it.
Yep, and all the windows are sealed shut.
Yep.
And they drag him out through the lobby, again, kicking and screaming.
Yep.
And he's actually taken to his apartment by those two guys. They're holding him to a chair. This was a really dark and kind of brutal scene.
Yeah.
There's one other guy who basically cooks meth over the stove.
The old hotshot.
Yeah. And it's scary how much detail they put into it. Mm-hmm. Like, they could have just, like, shown a spoon getting heated up, but they show him liquefying the whole thing.
Yeah.
They show him ripping off a small bit of cotton, putting it in there to absorb part of it, and then drawing it all up in the needle. Syringe. Yeah. And Elliot, you know, first he's just like, fuck you, you know. And then he's trying to bargain, and then he's like, look, I know about the bank. It's all going to be destroyed. White Rose isn't going to get away with it. And the guy comes over and they, you know, they tie him off. They find a vein. And the guy bends down, looks him right in the eye and goes, goodbye, friend.
Yeah.
And injects him with every bit of the drugs. And he...
And then we watch him slowly overdose, throw himself on the floor, try to get to the phone.
Knocks it over. You hear that. Meh, 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 meh,
yeah.
And
we watch him slowly die over like a good minute.
Yeah, it was like really creepy. Prolonged.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
I'm glad he didn't aspirate and vomit and all that shit like that.
Right.
It happens in real life.
And then he just kind of like his eyes roll up and it goes black and it says directed by Sam Esmail.
Yeah.
For about 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it comes back to him. Like it should have been the end of the episode, but suddenly it comes back to him. The three guys walk back in. Well,
Someone Narcans him. You just see he get injected with Narcan, but you don't see
who shot the nasal spray right up there.
Yeah, and then he wakes up and looks, and the three guys are back in the room.
With a fourth one.
Well, Angela's dad walks in.
Right.
And he just basically says, like, welcome back.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah.
I don't think he says anything else.
No. Now, originally, White Rose, her assistant, was talking to her about, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And her assistant was like, Elliot Alderson is a loser. He's a loose cannon. He's going to be nothing but trouble for us. And White Rose agreed and said, send him a message to remind him that, you know, basically we can do whatever we
want. Which is the Angela photo.
That's what I thought it was. But then this seemed to be an even bigger
because
message.
Because I feel like from the Angela's death till now has been like 2 months.
Because 2 weeks.
I thought it had been longer.
Nope, they said 2 weeks.
Because I thought it was... like October-ish when she died, and then now it's Christmas time.
I thought the same thing, but I know that he said in there at one point 2 weeks.
I thought it was 2 months.
Yeah.
Because they said, well, you know, we have to the end of the year right after Christmas, and then we're not going to need him anymore, and then we'll just blah, blah, blah. So that's how I, but okay. That was my recollection of it. But they did a lot. They killed Angela. We met a new character who then killed himself. Angela's dad is probably clearly going to be gunning for White Rose in this season, you know, secretly. You know, Darlene's all coked up. And then there's a great scene when Elliot is overdosing and he looks and he sees like himself as a kid, Mr. Robot, and who's the girl?
His mom.
Yeah, we hadn't seen her in a long time, right? I don't think. And they're all standing there together and basically he's like, and they're kind of talking about him dying. And he's like, well...
Yeah, because the kid goes, well, what's going to happen now? And she's like, basically, we're all going to go away because he's going to die. You can't be afraid of death. It happens.
Yeah. It was kind of weird. So I wonder if he's going to see them anymore or how that's going to happen. But regardless, at the end of the day, it was a great show.
It was phenomenal.
Good episodes.
Great episodes.
Yeah.
I liked watching it live and having no commercials.
Yes, that was great.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to mention to you, because I assume you've got the commercial as well, but the 15th, which is 8 days from today, Treadstone premieres on USA.
Yeah, I did see that.
Which is the Jason Bourne spinoff.
I don't know if I'm going to pick that one up. I mean, I love Jason Bourne, but I got so many friggin' shows.
I know. Well, just it, feast or famine. Because remember, a couple of weeks ago, you're like, oh, I can't wait for the shows to come back. There's nothing to watch.
I know. But it's like there's so many. And because of the Crisis on Infinite Earths coming up, I feel like I have to watch all the CW shows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Except for Black Lightning. I feel obligated to watch them all.
Makes sense.
Like right now, I don't know. I'm going to go to bed when you leave or go watch a show.
Yeah, it's 9:44. I don't know. Sometimes I like to watch a show this time of night.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just want to, like, put on Family Guy or something in the background so that I don't have to focus too hard.
I didn't know we were going to be recording for so long. Actually, I didn't eat dinner yet. So.
Why didn't you eat dinner yet?
Because I didn't get home from the barbershop till 6:45. And I took a shower and everything. And I went straight to bed and we started doing this.
You should eat something.
Yeah, I'm going to have to eat something to take my meds.
Right.
Anyhow, all right, well, that's it for this week. That's the longest episode we've had in quite a while, but we said it was going to be long this week.
I think last week was pretty long, too.
Yeah.
It was like around 2 hours.
Yeah, well, this is 2:20, basically.
Yeah.
So that's it, though.
All right.
I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
That's it. We'll be right back.